Maybe first of all, I could speak about the vaccine. It's a serious concern to me that this vaccine is being declared as safe and being injected into billions of arms internationally. We all know that vaccines traditionally need a 2 to 4 year period of time in order to be sure that adverse side effects are not statistically significant. And that has simply not happened with this vaccine. It's been rushed to market quite inappropriately because the scale of threat does not determine that degree of risk. The vast majority of people, the working world, are not going to die of this condition. It's going to be a very trivial flu-like illness. And the vulnerable, the older people, of course, should be protected in other ways that don't necessarily require a vaccine. That's called infection control methods that have been known for decades, and there are manuals about that on the shelf currently getting dusty. So the vaccine is, first of all, unnecessary. Secondly, it's reckless in terms of how it's being introduced because it's certainly not being shown to be safe. And then, of course, we had the recent realization that there were a significant number of events in women under 55 with thrombotic events, blood clots in various parts of the body, brain and legs, for example, that caused AstraZeneca's vaccine to be suspended in many countries internationally. Now, that of course cuts to the very core of what I was saying. These events would have been discovered in the normal course if they had extended the testing period, which they chose not to do. So here we have some unfortunate side effects that have essentially removed half of the potential population from vaccination, namely women under 55. So it's merely an example of what everyone's been saying that's at all knowledgeable about vaccines, that this was reckless, unnecessary, and unsafe. Anyone that's saying that this vaccine is safe without any qualification is guilty, in my opinion, if they're in medicine, of medical malpractice.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Today, April 30th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. And if you have gotten the correct link, if you're watching us on other platforms outside of YouTube, you might just be watching this on Super U right now. So welcome to the flagship show stream of Super U. And we have plenty of other fantastic creators that will be sharing on this over the next month. Slow start. We'll be getting there. We'll be getting this rolling. But for those that are there, make sure you share it. Make sure you sign up. Make sure you continue to recognize how YouTube is irrelevant, right? That's where we are today. Thank you for joining me. There's a very important discussion to go over today about the spike protein that we've already been touching on. The discussion about that spike protein has been being had for quite a while in the circles of experts, the ones that you're not supposed to listen to, the ones that are very highly educated, you know, well-credentialed, that just don't say the right thing. And they've been talking about the concern about this. Why? Because they read the science. They looked at the scientific studies from 2020 that discussed the concerns. They looked at the studies from the first few months of 2021 discussing these concerns, some of which we'll go over today. And they said, yes, this is very concerning because the science says these things are dangerous. And they said fake news, anti-science, as they cite the scientific material. Now, we're going to go over the spike protein discussion again today, but from a different angle, one of which has become this kind of new meme that doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong, understand, about vaccine shedding, in specifically about COVID-19 vaccines. Now, what we're going to do, instead of try to follow the trail about how they say it's fake, you know, the fact checkers, if you still believe that fact checkers out there today and these websites that are funded by the very companies that they're trying to argue against, like, so in this case, they're funded by the vaccine companies that are saying, no, that's a fake claim about our product. That's not a joke. We'll show you one example today. But if you still trust those fact checkers without doing your due diligence, you're part of the problem. Now, that doesn't mean they're always wrong or always right. The point is that you are the one that needs to be doing your due diligence, not trusting anybody, including me. But There's a very big point here that's made in Pfizer's own documentation, showing you that this is something that they were concerned about. But I guess it's fake news when it gets experimented on a bunch of people with an emergency authorization with rush trials. And then we just go, no, we're not going to talk about any of that stuff that we knew about. And we're going to get into a couple more interesting things here about some studies around the spike protein and how it's showing you, again, the science and multiple versions of the scientific research documentation is going to show you that they're finding possible permanent or long-lasting, in the very least, alteration of your genetic makeup. But that whole discussion, don't claim it'll change your body, because that's fake news, right? Well, we're going to start off first with the shout out to where that video came from. This is Anna Breeze, Breeze Media. She shared this clip today. Really, I'm just sharing the clip here that Dr. Hodgkinson, who's a highly credentialed expert, right? This is regardless of how you think of anybody, they're doctors. They've worked to earn the title. They have a right to speak on. Doesn't mean I know plenty of doctors that I think are ridiculous and not very intelligent. Now, I'm not even talking COVID related. I'm just saying throughout my life experience, but that doesn't mean they don't have a right to speak on it if they've earned the title. See, that's what's happening today is people are being shut down without any due diligence because they just say the opposite of what the narrative is, the dogma. And that's what he's talking about. The fact that this is anybody who is in exactly what he said. This is very clear. And if you're not blinding yourself intentionally or part of some grander agenda, you see this. It's very clear. And that's what people like him are saying. This is not a hypothesis, not a either or situation. There's very, very sound science here that's being ignored by the people shouting about trusting the science. And I find that to be pretty interesting. But just so you know, you're not alone. You're not crazy. There's plenty of people out there, experts, who agree with you. Now, I also want to make sure we don't forget about the upcoming Greater Reset, the Greater Reset. Not the Great Reset, but the Greater Reset. Spearheaded, I believe, by Derek Bros and his team at Conscious Resistance. And the point is, this is about showing you that there's not just one path forward, even from this direction, right? Even if you believe we need to take certain action about certain things because we've been doing them wrong. The point is that there's not just this Great Reset, Internet of Things, complete technocratic revolution mindset that will change everything. There's plenty of other ways, the opposite direction, with less government control, more freedom, more liberty, right? This is the idea. And that's what this whole event, 5 days of activation, is going to be about. I'm going to be one of the speakers at this. I'm trying to make it there personally. I'm in the works of that right now. Here's my picture there. There's Derek Bros. There's Whitney Webb. A lot of good people. Now, the point is we're going to be speaking about solutions and what we need to do going forward. And it's going to be a fantastic event, and I highly recommend you go there. The bottom line is we need to take, like I said this in the tweet the other day, if we are concerned, alarmed, scared about the direction they're going, put it simply, if we don't like the direction they're telling us we need to go, I think we owe it to ourselves to invest a little bit of time to understand fully what direction we actually want to go in. And that's what this will be, at least a beginning point. Now, starting off right out of the gate. Now, this is the important discussion about whether or not we see some evidence, at the very least, that people who have been vaccinated for COVID-19 in some way are transmitting something, whether it's the adverse events, whether this is like shedding RNA discussions or the things we've heard people talk about, or whether this is some sort of transmission of the something viral, which everybody would argue is not possible because this doesn't have it and so on. But look, just because somebody in a powerful position says it's not possible doesn't mean we shouldn't think about it, question it, ask maybe it is possible, right? There's WMDs over there. We know that for sure. But guess what? There weren't, right? How many times have we heard this discussion? Everybody should know that one. Despite that being just like the cherry pick surface level one, there's 1,000 of those. They lie. We've seen 100 of them just in COVID-19, probably a lot more than that. So let's take a look at this information. This is one I already showed you, in fact. This is from Veyers, and this is just to start this off. This is only a report, as always, and we're going to talk about Veyers and something that Del Bigtree dove into that goes further in what we've been telling you later after this vaccine point, way down the show, so it's later down there. Remember that 1% is what this represents, and that's a report that was done, and I'll show you that, and I mean, it's right here. I'll go over it when we get to it in a minute. It's a Harvard HHS document, and it outlines very clearly 1%. Theirs and general reported vaccine problems, which they say are common. I mean, since I brought it up, I might as well just show you. It says right there, adverse events from drugs are common which is the literal opposite of what we hear from the mainstream media. Common is not one in a million. The phrase one in a million literally means very uncommon. That's why we use that. That's one in a million. Common is not that, right? So right out of the gate, you can see that the media is aggressively misrepresenting what they have already decided is the truth. They being whatever, the hierarchy enslaving you is the acronym. But underreported. Well, we know that for sure. But then it says, although 25% of these patients experience an adverse event, less than 0.3 of all adverse events are serious events. But it says, likewise, fewer than 1% of adverse events in general, which means death. That's a serious adverse event is death, right? So that's included. Fewer than 1%. That's according to the HHS and Harvard. I think it's actually up top. Yeah, right here, right? So we have Harvard and HHS. Okay, so that's clear. I'll go over that again in a minute later in the show. But so a point being is that we know that's only 1% of the possible, you know, give or take. I mean, it's not always guaranteed exactly 1%, but the reality is it's a lot more than what we're seeing. That's clear. And that is something that they've all said in multiple ways. I mean, Europe says the same thing in a variation. So that being stated, remember that these are small. Now this is, or, you know, a small portion of what we're possibly out there. And especially today, people are being so brainwashed into being afraid to report these things because I don't want to be an anti-vaxxer. Like we told you that story about the girl who almost died because she was afraid to report it, right? That's these people are hurting people by scaring them into not wanting to report what's happening. Now, this was a report about a woman who got vaccinated, but had a baby who was breastfeeding, which, by the way, is ridiculous because they've already made it clear that they haven't experienced. I just showed you this in the last show. They haven't investigated whether or not there's an issue there. And yet we have people giving people who have babies and are breastfeeding vaccines. I bet you they're not even asking whether that's happening because they don't care. It's only about getting the vaccine administered. We've been brainwashed by this. That's whether or not you think it's even a good thing, understand. Realize that we're talking about very clear markers that have been laid out to be like, look, we don't know. Don't do this. And nobody's stopping anybody. Now, what it says is, it wasn't life-threatening to her personally. The patient got her second dose of the Pfizer vaccine March 17th while at work. On March 18th, so the next day, her five-month-old breastfed infant developed a rash. Within 24 hours, was inconsolable. Refused to eat, developed a fever. Patient brought the baby to the ER where assessments were performed. Blood analysis revealed elevated liver enzymes. And there's various connections there that we've made over all sorts of different things. Infant was hospitalized but continued to decline and died. A day. Diagnosis, TTP. Which I believe was, again, we're talking about some, this is, let me look it up just to be absolutely sure. Yeah, that's what I was, because it was listed right above, but I didn't want to jump to conclusions. This is what I was saying earlier. I didn't re-research, I looked over this in a previous show. I grabbed this to relate to the other thing. But as always, due diligence, even live, is important. Now, thrombotic thrombocytopenia purpura. How many times have we heard thrombotic thrombocytopenia in this discussion? The fact that I can't even pronounce that without thinking twice about it. This is everywhere. People are currently getting, this is the issue with the AstraZeneca vaccine, with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Okay, so we're going to pretend that a woman can get a vaccine. A day later, a baby dies randomly. Well, technically a day later starts to get sick. And then another day dies and she gets diagnosed, or the baby gets diagnosed with the same thing we're seeing from people that are dying from blood clots from the vaccine. Is it possible that could happen? Sure. But let's not pretend like this isn't the most obvious thing that needs to be investigated. Guess what they did? They dismissed it as not related. So, you know, there's more of these, right? These are what are being written. This is the point about dismissing what's reported to Veyers because, well, it's unverified. We're going to get into that later in the show, but recognize how insulting that is. Now, just because, so you know that there's been a valid report that happened. Angela Nashville shares this document, proof of shedding for those who want to know more. Document is 146 pages, worth reading. I agree. Thank you. Just wanted to shout out Angela for sharing it. There's been a couple other people that have shared it. This is a very easy thing to look at, and she did include the link. So I appreciate that. That's how this should be done. Now, here's the document itself. You can see phase 1, 2, 3. As always, right? Because that's how you normally do them. You bunch all of them together, right? Placebo-controlled, randomized, observer-blind, dose-finding study to evaluate the safety, tolerability, immunogenicity, and efficacy of SARS-CoV-2 RNA vaccine candidates against COVID-19 in healthy individuals. Now, the real point is to jump down to page 67. Now, you'll note that we're under the category of severe adverse events. Now, they're talking about what to do, right? The reporting and how this works, right? They're talking about any severe adverse event is death. And I think down to, I don't know where the marker stops, but it's ones that are more severe, obviously, not just a fever, things like that. So this is a big deal stuff, right? Stuff that you could die from, right? So going down further, it says exposure during pregnancy or breastfeeding and occasional exposure, occupational exposure. So the fact that they're even discussing the concept of exposure during breastfeeding is interesting. Because that seems to imply that at the very least that you can pass this on, or let's be clear, that they're studying to make sure that doesn't happen. But don't you think that the fact that they're studying to see if it doesn't happen is something that means if it's listed as a possibility? First of all, okay. So now it says exposure to the study intervention, which is interesting. So the study, exposing this to the study intervention, we're talking about the vaccine and what's in it, understudy during pregnancy or breastfeeding and occupational exposure are reportable to Pfizer safety within 24 hours. Okay. Then it gets into specifically exposure during pregnancy. Now it says if it occurs, a female, this is what the examples, if a female participant is found to be pregnant while receiving or after discontinuing study intervention. So right there, just remember that this is what they're telling you, that that's a big deal. Like, oh, we found out she's pregnant. That's not good. Meanwhile, people are literally are promoting people to be vaccinated while they're pregnant. The media has been telling you, you should do it. Here's some people arguing that this is what will save everybody. Israel's basically coercing them into doing it. They're experimenting on them. This is all while that test is ongoing. They're currently testing on pregnant women, and they're coercing women that are pregnant into getting this vaccine. And meanwhile, on their own documentation, it goes, whoa, if we find out they're pregnant, that's an issue. This is disgusting, right? This is the kind of obscene, obvious things you can find that they're lying to you about. The fact that this experimental vaccine, which again, the NIH stated as experimental in January of this year, 2021, that is unapproved, as the FDA stated as early as January, April 6th, excuse me, of this year, unapproved, experimental, and the fact that they're pushing this on people that it states in the documentation shouldn't even have it, shows you how far off the rails we are. And they're acting like that's okay. Why? Because we're in a pandemic based on numbers we know don't even come close to reaching what we classically thought was a pandemic, or the fact that it's lower than the flu when you look at most everything combined that's on the CDC website, or the fact that Dr. Hodgkinson just told you in the beginning of this show that that is not how you dictate that information. You don't get to decide what risk is acceptable underneath something like this. That's not how this works. But here we are because COVID-19 rewrote everything, apparently. But let's get into the most important part. A male participant who is receiving or has discontinued study intervention exposes a female partner prior to or around the time of conception. What does it mean, exposes? Okay, so a male participant, meaning somebody who is getting the vaccine during the trial, has discontinued the study intervention, or excuse me, it says who is receiving or has previously received, exposes a female partner. What does that possibly mean? Let's not be overly obtuse about this. It's quite obvious what that's implying underneath the discussion of the same point. Okay, so it gets even more important. Next one. A female is found to be pregnant while being exposed or having been exposed to study intervention, the vaccine and what's in it, due to environmental exposure. Environmental exposure? Below are examples of environmental exposure during pregnancy. A female family member or healthcare provider reports that she is pregnant after having been exposed to the study intervention, get this, by inhalation or skin contact. Well, what do you know about that? So you can be exposed to the intervention, the vaccine, or what's in it, by inhalation or skin contact, or at the very least, what they're claiming is that this is something that is under the category of exposure during pregnancy within the document for Pfizer's biotech vaccine and their safety trial. Okay, well, I'm sure there's some way that people could bend this and say, well, this is just something that they always test for. That's certainly possible. But that doesn't explain why we're already seeing examples of this and why there's plenty more science and evidence that suggests that this is currently happening. Now, I'm not even going to try to get into the discussion of whether this is something that happens in all vaccines. I'm specifically concerned and focused on the mRNA vaccines, or more broadly, the spike protein, SARS-CoV-2 spike protein vaccines, and whether that is something that is finding its way into other people after somebody is vaccinated and the other person is not. It's quite a bit of that happening right now. Here's a funny point is we're seeing this online now where they're suddenly coming out in this really strong push going vaccinated people should not be exposed to non-vaccinated people. Now, what's interesting is that's a different phrasing, right? What have we heard before? Well, we don't want them around people who are unvaccinated because that makes them unsafe, even though they're being told that the vaccine is protecting them, because that totally makes sense. But notice the terminology. Vaccinated people should not be exposed to non-vaccinated people. Okay, wait, maybe that's because they know something that we're not being told. And they don't want those vaccinated people to somehow do something. Right? That doesn't necessarily make sense to me, because you'd think that they would, if you're believing it in this, you're seeing it in this perception, that they would want that to happen. I don't know. But nonetheless, I found the exposed term, and the point is really, as it seems that, well, it should be the other way around. Is that, that's kind of why I use that image today, right? Don't shed on me. It's kind of interesting that that is something. And this seems to align with a lot of discussions we've been seeing. Even from some people that have right, we have every right to be suspicious about, but there's been a lot of discussions being circulated about the concerns here. Now, in no way does this mean we should then be discussing other vaccines, right? This should make you put all of it down for a minute and be like, wait a minute, there's something very unnerving going on within the entirety of this vaccine, not just COVID-19, but the health industry. Now, here is also why I find this to be really interesting, is that we've all seen this. When we have a story and it's something that is clearly hitting a little too close to something, they come out everywhere and it's almost instantaneously. This story to me only really started getting it. Like, I saw this about 2-3 days ago. I should have jumped on it right then. I didn't see anybody talking about it. Just so much going on. We were super busy. I said, I'll get to it. We'll talk about it. And you know me, I'm not one to want to just rush out of the gate and be the first talk. I want to make sure I study it and I research it and I bring you as much possible as I can. The point is that this came out on April 29th. So it was like, and it's everywhere, right? I mean, it's fact check. No, this is impossible. Fact check. Vaccine shedding's not true. It's everywhere. And I find that very telling. Now, does that necessarily prove that this is right? No. But it makes you wonder what is in here, what's around this, or maybe this exact claim that they really don't want you to think about. Because you remember, they've done this around things we know have turned out to be true. There were fact checks about the discussions of the, you know, any number of things, Iraq, Syria. I mean, they do this all the time and they go, that fact check, not true. And then you find out it is, sort of like the PCR test or the vaccines or the mass discussion. They fact check all those things. Right, so very telling that this comes out of the gate really hot. And it says, Miami school cited as the reason for rejecting vaccinated teachers. It says, when a Miami school said earlier this week that it wouldn't allow vaccinated teachers in its classroom, its founder cited vaccine shedding as her main concern. Well, clearly, Pfizer's concerned about that too. So not something we should balk at, but clearly that's what they're about to do. The trope is currently, just so you guys are familiar, this is always a term used to just like undermine things, a figurative or metaphorical use of a word or expression, which is funny because it doesn't even really mean what they use it as, that it means like a fake thing, like a fake news spreading commentary. Like that's what they use it as. Oh, that anti-Semitic trope. Well, it's a figurative and metaphorical use of a word. So it's, you know, it's funny how they grab and use these things in a sun, but that's how they mean it. So it's fake, right? Is currently a buzz in anti-vaccine circles, right? So anybody that reads this discussion or happens to fall across the Pfizer document is suddenly anti-vaccine because they see that Pfizer was concerned about it in their own documentation, or the fact that women are reporting that their babies die after breastfeeding one day after their vaccine. But yeah, but I must be anti-vax because I'm reading science, right? This is the kind of broad, ignorant, broad brush characterizations that they will classically lay at our feet. That we do, right? But here they are. Everybody anywhere that doesn't agree with the narrative is an anti-vax, anti-science conspiracy theorist, according to these very well-researched experts, right? Nicole Baldwin, MD, a pediatrician. Well, because of course, who do you go to when you have a discussion about immunology and virology and vaccines and genetic modification? You go to a pediatrician, right? Who has been the target of attacks by the anti-vax community. Ah, and then it becomes clear because you want people to go, oh, she's being attacked because she's a doctor. Well, that's not fair. I'm going to support her. This is how stupid they think we all are. Some people fall for it. Quote, it's amazing and sad what people will believe, Baldwin told the media, right? you know, like people believing that masks work like they say they do, and they're not, that they're statistically significant in transmission, despite all of the all the studies saying that, or just by the fact that lockdowns have any discernible effect against transmission, but yet, you know, I'm losing my the terminology there. They do have no effect, and they do hurt a lot of people, was my point, but I lost the, they pretending like they don't do this. It's very frustrating that we can have people like this trotted out. A pediatrician. It's amazing what people will believe while we're holding up scientific documentation. Now, I'm not even saying, and look, we're not even saying this is the fact. We're saying this is interesting. Here's what the science says. You should think about it. That's literally the opposite of what the mainstream media does. They say, here's what you need to believe, and we have the science. We'll show you. Well, we maybe won't. Maybe won't. Trust the experts say. There, that's enough. Essentially, they believe that people who've had the vaccine can somehow shed the spike protein. Isn't it interesting that she specifically focuses in on the spike protein, despite the fact that most of the coverage I see doesn't really hone in on that? Maybe because there's a point there, which in turn can cause menstrual cycle irregularities. Well, that's interesting. Miscarriages and maybe making women sterile just by being close proximity. Now, I'm sure there's somebody out there online saying this vaccine is going to make you grow horns or whatever. And does that ultimately mean that when I say this vaccine could cause side effects, that that's what I'm including? No, of course not. But this is always how they do it. As I tell you, they point to one Facebook post and they say this thing said this. And all of these guys are fake because we debunked that Facebook post. You have to be a like remedial, like preschool level to fall for something that stupid or just want to because you agree with their narrative. You can't debunk what we're saying by pointing to something that we didn't say. That should be a no-brainer. But the bottom line is, there's all sorts of examples of that being reported, or even just from people who got the vaccine, right? So if we know that Pfizer's concerned that these things can pass on to pregnant women when they're around the father who was vaccinated, why wouldn't we ask this question? It says, well, just so I can show you this first, oh, yeah. So this is, I do this, remember, so I can don't have to hear them do this. Well, so, there it goes. There it goes. Reports of menstrual cycle changes after COVID vaccine highlight issues with clinical trials, right? It's ridiculous that we're pretending like this is not something that's happening. Now, somebody personally told me, somebody I'm close to, and I'm not asking you to believe this. I'm asking you to believe the reports we're seeing. But since you are here for the show, I can tell you somebody that I believe and that I trust has told me that they are around a person who was vaccinated, their husband, somebody who was on menopause for years, who suddenly got their period again. Somebody who is not vaccinated. Somebody who's around somebody who's vaccinated. Now, by no means do I want you to take that and make that your foundation for this argument, because me stating something with nothing to back it up doesn't necessarily prove what I'm saying. But what I'm adding to is the fact that I know somebody who has had that experience as a fact. So the point is, the reality is, we can see that this is there is a connection here. Now, is there something else that explains it? That's certainly possible. Going back to this, quote, and of course, this is from the well-respected expert on YouTube, ZDogMD, right? Because we know how well he covers this information and observes the scientific information that we're talking about and doesn't just undermine you with ridiculous sidesteps and ad hominems and straw man attacks, right? Oh, actually, never mind. That's exactly what he does. This is a new low from the delusional wing of the anti-vax cult, he says. ZDogMD, in a video he recently posted to bust vaccine shredding myths. Yeah, what a myth buster. Calling people names for stating science. Look, I mean, we're showing this, the Pfizer document. We're showing Veyer reports. We're showing mainstream media articles. But because he wants to debunk some main, you know, you get the point. And this is nonstop. I know people in my life that would look to ZDogMD as the gospel of anything truthful. And if he says it's wrong, well, then you've been debunked for life. That's the ignorant mentality of a lot of people today. Demania said the misinformation originates from an earlier claim that synctin, a protein involved in placental formation, bears some structural similarities to the spike protein, and therefore vaccination would interfere with the woman's productive systems. Many a fact check has shown that vaccines don't target the protein. Okay, I've never even heard of that. But apparently, that's what I'm getting this from. Simple. All done. Ryan got it from this old thing, and he's wrong. That's what they're doing. This misinformation originates from, it says another logical fallacy he pointed out, then quote, why then wouldn't natural spike protein do the same thing? Wouldn't you be more scared of natural coronavirus infection? Oh, but it's natural. Guess what, Z-Dog? It does do that. That's what we're going to get into next. You see, the funny part is that entire show we already went over about why the spike protein is dangerous and all the scientific studies that find that exactly, that the spike protein, not even with COVID-19, but the spike protein alone is causing a lot of problems. Isn't that interesting? So it's funny that so these guys are either not doing their due diligence or they don't care to, and they're lying to you. What this is that kind of snide response you get from these kind of debunkers. Wouldn't the natural spike protein do the same thing? Ooh, got you. Yeah, it does, buddy. It does. And we've already proven that. And so this is why the people in this community are 15 steps ahead of these people, because they don't even care to look at this stuff. They think it's fake, or they already know they don't want to look at it because they're part of something. Or there's plenty of other examples that could fit in there. But the reality is the spike protein has been shown to be alarmingly dangerous. But the reality is all they associate that with is COVID-19, except for the fact that guess what else has the spike protein? Your vaccines. And the whole point is that it's the same thing. And that's why it works, because so they claim, because the natural situation recognizes it as the spike protein. So if it's in the vaccine, how is it not dangerous if it's dangerous with it on COVID-19? It's an interesting point that should be talked about, but it's not. One more point here. Researchers looking into the link between COVID-19 and menstruation. Now, here's the funny part. April 26, 2021. So it's really great that they're doing all these research investigation studies to find out whether there's risks. You know, and as I said last time, I really wish we had some kind of process where they could do all these things before they gave them to everybody. Oh, that's right. We do. And they didn't do this stuff, or they skipped it, or they rushed it, or they jumped over. I mean, this is so insulting to our intelligence how often they're doing a new COVID-19 study to see if the vaccines cause anaphylaxis. Oh, a new study researching this or that, the vaccine and menstruation. Why would they be researching the link between the vaccine and menstruation if there's nothing, if it's so laughably ridiculous that Z-Dog MD can just crack up about it and be like, you, these anti-vax cult members, they're so stupid, but we're currently doing an investigation to find out if it's true. Somebody asked in the chat, who's Z-Dog? Don't even worry about it. It's not even worth your time. It's another one of these doctors on YouTube that is, you know, it's funny. They talk about how we're trying to become famous and make rich on YouTube when it's ridiculous. The only way you do that is if you buy into the narrative and you sell what they're selling, what they want you to sell. That's why he's doing exponentially well. And I bet you he's making a hell of a lot of money from YouTube. That is the point. But anyway, the reality is it's clearly there. If they're looking into the link between these things, I'm sure they're going to find that it's not there, just like they pretended to find that about the blood clot, even though Norway proved that it was there. You see how this works? But the reality is it is an issue, and they do know that. Ann Thompson received her first dose on what should have been her last day of her period. I continue to have spotting the entire time, and now 2 weeks post getting the vaccine, I think it was 3 days ago, I started my period again. Right? So you can see how this is a very real thing that is absolutely happening in regard to the vaccine and people who take it. Considering what Pfizer is telling you about their concerns about how that can happen, I don't understand why this is even being a no-brainer here. Or I don't understand why it's not a no-brainer. Now, finally, here's an interesting article. All the citations are here. You can read them for yourself, including the study that I've already talked about. We should have the right to refuse blood transfusion from vaccinated for COVID-19, but can we? It says, after I found that blood donors can donate almost immediately after being vaccinated for COVID-19, I decided to check if there were any safety concerns since vaccines or their product can be transferred from the donor to the recipient. There is indeed a serious issue with COVID-19 vaccines, which were practically swept under the carpet by the health authorities. Now, right out of the gate, remember that we're talking about things that are not... If we're talking about spike protein, the RNA, like we've already seen all these different discussions about how this stuff, and we're going to get into a couple more about how it affects your body more so, but how it doesn't just stay where they're saying it does. There's plenty of ways we've talked to doctors about this. So the possibility that this could find its way outside of your body, or at the very least transmit through the breast milk, you know, it's exactly what Pfizer was concerned about. It says, as in well-known, healthy people don't suffer from COVID-19. And guys, that's the other point, by the way. That what they're talking about is COVID-19 being an issue in the spike protein And the idea is that take the vaccine so you're at less risk because it's higher risk from COVID-19. But again, the same point is that if you're not sick, you're not at risk there unless you take the vaccine, right? They want you to pretend like you're all at risk from this thing, but you're not. And even their information continues to make that clear. If you don't know that, ask yourself why you continue to take the fear-mongering at face value when it's literally posted on CDC's website, if you can dig it past all the nonsense in front of you, that this boils down to 0.14%. And that's including the over 70s, over 80s. That's an average. So you remove that, obviously, that you take 50, 60 below, and this is underneath. This is less than the flu. This is almost non-existent for people who are, I mean, you're a kid. It's zero. Zero according to the CDC. But sure, let's inject them with an experimental injection that's not approved, that is clearly being shown to have all kinds of side effects. As I keep telling you, children are at a higher risk for severe adverse events than they are from COVID-19. That's a fact. It's math. Do it yourself. Zero is lower than anything else, guys. And I don't know why in the world we would pretend that they need this thing. And asymptomatic transmission has been shown to be literally non-existent. Even the 300 out of 10 million that they found were not transmissible. That's the study we're talking about. Anyways, continuing. COVID-19, because the immune system neutralizes the virus before it multiplies. When a healthy person receives a vaccine, immune response may lead to actually more harm than good. We've talked about antibody-dependent enhancement. These are all the same things that were being caused by the elements of this vaccine. mRNA vaccines, for example, induce creation of the virus spike protein, which couldn't be found in a healthy body. Protein epitopes, the part of the antigen molecule to which an antibody attaches, share a homology with human immunoglobulins. This means that spike protein antibodies can attack immunoglobulins, which can lead to serious health problems like developing autoimmune diseases like amyloidosis and multiple myeloma. Cross antibody reactions with blood proteins can interfere with blood coagulation regulation. Well, what do you know about? Doesn't that sound familiar? Maybe strokes, heart attacks, blood clots, and cause blood clots, it says. Last is already well documented an adverse effect of some of the vaccines, the blood clots. Quote, spike proteins of the coronaviruses can also glue or merge neighboring cells, which can ultimately form a clump of up to 100 fused cells and perish in the process. The presence of the isolated spike protein alone without the virus ball can lead to such cell fusion on a large scale. Okay, so if the spike protein alone can cause that, the vaccine with the spike protein alone in it can also cause that. It says the genetic engineering vaccines currently use a program, the recipient cells, the recipient cells to produce such spike protein everywhere in the body. In which organs this happens cannot be predicted. It must therefore be feared that the strong tendency to uncontrollable cell fusion triggered by spike proteins can cause severe tissue damage and corresponding immunological and hematological consequences, tissue destruction, microthrombosis, and secondary immune complications could result in severe clinical pictures and death within a short period of time. Now, guys, these, you could argue that this is not, I mean, look, this is science. This is what I keep laughing about, is there's so much science out there that's saying what they don't want you to see. So when they just blandly say, trust science, they clearly don't mean this. So it's just so laughably ridiculous how they continue to make these claims like trust women, as we keep referencing the same idea. It's like, there's no way that you like, again, and eventually we're going to come back to a point to where they're no longer actually trusting, you know, it's just insulting. And here's the link. You can read it for yourself, but it goes on to say there is a serious problem with so-called RNA vaccines. Vaccine RNA has specific sequences that may induce pathologic prion conformations. It means that people may suffer from prion disease because of it. And here's the study we've already told you about. We've talked about this. The results indicate, and I haven't included, I'm going to show it later in the show. The results indicate that the vaccine RNA has specific sequences that may induce TDP43 and FUS to fold into their pathologic prion conformations. Furthermore, the spike protein created by the translation of the vaccine RNA binds angiotensin converting. Oh, that's right. I always do that. H2, not the big long word, binds H2, the protein, a zinc containing enzyme, or H2 and a zinc containing enzyme, that interaction has the potential to increase intracellular zinc. Zinc ions have been shown to cause the transformation of TDP-43 to its pathologic prion conformation. The folding of TDP-43 and FUS into their pathologic prion conformations is known to cause ALS, front temporal lobar degeneration, Alzheimer's disease, and other neurological degenerative diseases. It's just, it's, this is also science that's been ignored. That came out December 2020. So the reality here is that there's something to this, guys. I mean, Pfizer would not continue, they wouldn't put this in their safety trial specifically for the COVID vaccine if it wasn't something that they were concerned about or something that was possible, right? That's all I'm saying. If it's there, it's clearly possible. So why would they so categorically dismiss this? And why would they come out with 1,000 different fact checks for why this isn't true over the process of a couple of days? Maybe because there's something going on. Now, I highly recommend you watch this show and go in, dive into the studies and the science that shows you. I try to put these little interjections for so you guys know, but it's always in chronological order. So you can just watch the show and kind of just give you a good estimate. But in any case, there's a lot of data right here that shows you that this is something we need to be concerned about. This was one of the main ones. The SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alters barrier function in 2D static and 3D microfluidic in vitro models of the human blood-brain barrier. There's a problem with this stuff, guys, and it's talking about the spike protein by itself. They know this stuff. Now, here's the more important part. COVID-19 alters human genes, explaining mystery behind coronavirus long haulers, so they say. The article and the people who wrote it. I happen to think this whole long haul thing, you know, I could be wrong. I happen to think it's far more indicative of depression, the lockdown stuff. You know, people are literally going crazy and having depression and acting out. And then also that they're wearing something that's causing infections all over their face every day, all day. That's clearly adding to their issues where that gives them fevers and infections and oral thrush and bacterial pneumonia, which has the same side effects as COVID or symptoms as COVID-19 and is also contagious, right? These are being diagnosed as COVID-19, just like it happened in 1918. That's been admitted to. The vast majority of what happened there was bacterial pneumonia. That's been admitted in multiple studies. So why wouldn't we consider that today? God, because who knows? We don't trust the science around here, apparently, right? Trust the science, except that science, right? But the point is, COVID-19 alters these. Now, how does it alter these? Well, the article makes it quite clear. The spike protein. So if the spike protein has the ability to alter your genes, that too means that the vaccine spike protein can do that as well. It says, quote, or specifically, scientists reveal the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2, the virus causing COVID-19, creates long-lasting changes to human gene expression. These tiny spikes cover the surface of coronavirus cells. They allow the virus to bind to certain receptors on human cells and hijack their functions, leading to COVID infections. Once the spike cuts into the patient's cells, the virus releases its own genetic material into the cell so it can replicate. Goes on to say, quote, we found that exposure to the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alone was enough to change baseline gene expression in airway cells. So really take that to heart right there. Not the virus, not just the spike protein alone was enough to change the baseline gene expression in airway cells, your lungs. Somebody's, hold on, I swear, this is going to crack me up if this is the case. Bear with me for 1 second, ladies and gentlemen. It looks to me, not that it should matter, because if you're on YouTube right now, the question is always, why are you there? Because YouTube is a broken piece of garbage dumpster fire that is going to block you at all possible opportunities. God, I knew it. Okay, just so you know, 3 times I checked this, and this I shouldn't even matter, but I am going to do this really quickly just so you guys can see. No, it doesn't even matter. I'm going to fix this and just tell you why I'm doing it. But the point is, YouTube was desperate to stop me from doing the pirate streams. They really are. It's pretty pathetic. That's why they gave my channel back, I think, because I was clearly, they didn't like, they couldn't stop it. They don't know what to do. So what happens every single time is I go in and I add in allow embedding on my website. The reason I saw this is somebody's commenting in the chat. Why is this not able to be played on the website? Well, because twice I double checked that it said allow embedding. I checked it when I posted it. I checked right before I went live. Guess what is now no longer checked right now? Allow embedding. Guess who's the only one that could possibly do that? YouTube. You know how funny that is? And it's every time they do that, every single time. It's the only thing they can do to stop the video from playing on my website while I'm broadcasting, short of deleting the entire channel, which would be really conspicuous. And I don't think they want to keep deleting every single thing that I do because it makes me look like I'm getting to them. You see, there's a game being played here. They're desperate because they know that we all see what they are. And all they have is the government backing them up.
No longer check.
There you go. Now it's playing on my website for that person. Thank you for pointing that out in the chat. I just find that to be so pathetic. Like, I'm not even trying to, like, jab YouTube. I could care less about them, especially since right now we're broadcasting on Super U, right? So who's those that didn't know that, here is the link in the chat. Go ahead and leave Super U. Or excuse me, go ahead and leave YouTube. Nobody likes YouTube. Go somewhere else. they're dead, right? It's pretty interesting. But the point was, let's go back to where we were, that they don't like us telling the truth. Thank you to Tina for pointing that out to me. It should be good now. But again, I really hope you'll go somewhere else. The link is right there above it to Super U. Anyway, let's keep continuing. The spike protein alone. Spikes make long-term changes to human cells. One thing goes on to say, this suggests that symptoms seen in patients may initially result from the spike protein interaction with the cells directly. Like, this is so crazy. Like, how do they not recognize that this absolutely represents the same spike protein that we're dealing with in the vaccine? Seriously. Researchers examined how exposure to spike protein impacts cultured human airway cells in lab experiments. They also compared the results to studies using cell samples from actual COVID-19 patients. After culturing, scientists exposed the cells to low and high concentrations of purified spike protein. The results revealed differences in gene expression, which remained in the cells even after the infection passed. Long-term manipulation. The most affected genes included ones controlling the body's, guess what? Inflammatory response. These pieces are falling together like a puzzle made out of all squares, right? This is perfect. Like everything leans back to the same discussion of the spike protein, the thrombocytopenia, the thrombosis, the blood clots, the strokes, the inflammatory response, everything. I mean, right now, off the top of my head, is it a coincidence that the masks are leading to systemic inflammation? There's something happening here. That's not a joke. You can easily look this stuff up. We're talking about the idea that the look up any dental website right now. They're going to be screaming about teeth falling out and cavities going through the roof, people having bad breath and, you know, halitosis and periodontal disease, gum disease, which leads to systemic inflammation, which is very serious. Systemic inflammation is, you basically tie most things, your ailments back to that. I just find it pretty interesting that they all seem to tie back together. Next one, gene changes might explain long-haul COVID symptoms. Airway cells exposed to SARS-CoV-2 spike protein exhibited persisting changes in gene expression. This is the one they were referencing. Results from a new cell study suggest that SARS-CoV-2 spike protein can bring about long-term gene expression changes. Quote, we found that exposure to SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alone was enough to change baseline gene expression in airway cells. Here's a different study. This is from April 27th. These are all new, right? This is, so again, ask yourself, why aren't they reporting this? Is this not science? Didn't they just say trust the science? So if this is new information, why aren't they pointing it out and saying, well, here is what we think? They're ignoring it. Why is that? If it's fake, then say it's fake. If it's wrong, say it's wrong. Well, they're not. They're outright ignoring the science. Isn't that funny? SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alone may cause lung damage. Well, there's another connection. Lung damage of all things, really? Now, remember, we're not talking about COVID-19 here. We're talking about the spike protein in the vaccine. This article is discussing the spike protein in COVID-19, but that's the same spike protein. So what we're asking here is whether the vaccine itself can cause these same things. And this seems to make that quite clear. Using a newly developed mouse model of acute lung injury, researchers found that exposure to SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alone was enough to induce COVID-19-like symptoms, including severe inflammation of the lungs. I don't know why that is not the slam dunk of the century right there. They're telling you just the spike protein was enough to cause everything that looks like COVID-19. So what are we seeing everywhere? Israel gives the vaccine and we see all of these people break out with what they said was COVID-19 symptoms at the very least. We're seeing that right now. We just saw a report from mainstream that came out today that said all these people came out with COVID-19 right afterward. Now, remember that the idea is that that can be the very reason that you end up testing positive. Right. There was just a discussion about this in regard to certain tests, which also actually use the spike protein as it involved in that. And the point is that that itself, people are claiming, can cause you to later test positive, or at least the possibility. So right, we're talking about people who are getting this vaccine and later walking away and people are telling them they have it. Now, maybe they do, or maybe they just have this making them sick. And as Dr. Bhakti's asking, you should make sure you don't have blood clots. You're hearing something funny and you're hearing tonight, you think you've got tinnitus, you've got a major headache, you've got swelling, different things. Go make sure you don't have a blood clot. It's serious enough to where this expert is pleading with you to check it out. Goes on to say, our findings show that SARS-CoV-2 spike protein causes lung injury even without the presence of intact virus. That's a bit more clear. The spike protein without the virus can cause lung injury, according to this PhD. It says this previously unknown mechanism could cause symptoms before substantial viral replications occur. Seems pretty damn obvious to me. At the very least, if I was an honest investigator, honest scientist, or doctor, I would go, that's worth investigating. Not today. Not in COVID clown world. Here's another study. SARS-CoV-2 prion-like domains in spike proteins enable higher affinity to ACE2. Through the abstract, currently, the world is struggling with the coronavirus disease COVID-19, caused by the severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2. That's what they're saying. Prion-like domains are critical for virulence and the development of therapeutic targets. However, the prion-like domains in the SARS-CoV-2 pre-tome have not been analyzed. That's interesting. I wonder why. In this in silico study, forgot I wanted to look that up. In biology. So would that be in vivo? I wonder why that's different. In silico study, using the PLAAC algorithm, we identified the presence of prion-like domains in the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. Compared with other viruses, a striking difference was observed in the distribution of prion-like domains in the spike protein. What do you know, right? So this specific one, it's almost like it's been tailored to do exactly this, right? Since SARS-CoV-2 was the only coronavirus with a prion-like domain found in the receptor binding domain of the S1 region of the spike protein. Isn't that weird? Just so happens to be perfectly designed to do exactly, you know, this is very telling to me. The presence and unique distribution of prion-like domains in the SARS-CoV-2 receptor binding domains of the spike protein is particularly interesting, since although the SARS-CoV-2 and SARS-CoV-S proteins share the same host cell receptor, ACE2, SARS-CoV-2 demonstrates a 10 to 20-fold higher affinity for ACE2. Finally, we identified prion-like domains in the HA1 helix of the ACE2 receptor that interact with the viral receptor binding domain of SARS-CoV-2. Taken together, the present findings indicate that the identified PRDs in the SARS-CoV-2 receptor binding domain and ACE2 region that interact with RBD have important functional roles in the viral adhesion and entry. So, breaking down, a study has revealed the terrifying danger of mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, including prion-based disease, causing your brain to generate progressively, which we'll show you that study again in a second so you don't forget about it. The mRNA vaccine-induced prions may cause neurodegenerative diseases because long-term memories are maintained by prion-like proteins. The study concluded that mRNA-based vaccines may also cause ALS, front temporal lobar degeneration, Alzheimer's disease, and other neurological degenerative diseases in the vaccine recipients, which is important that you fully understand what this is really getting at, right? And this was the other point we read last time. It says the analysis of the Pfizer vaccine specifically against COVID-19, identified two potential risk factors for inducing prion disease in humans. The RNA sequence in the vaccine contains sequences believed to induce TDP-43 and FUS to aggregate their prion-based conformation, leading to the development of common neurodegenerative diseases. I mean, this seems to be very sound, and nobody's talked about this. In particular, it has been shown that RNA sequences have increased affinity to bind TDP-43 and or FUS and may cause TDP-43 or FUS to take their pathological configurations in the cytoplasm. In the current analysis of total 16, we identified an additional UG-rich sequences were identified. Where was it? The spike protein encoded by the vaccine binds binds ACE2, an enzyme which contains zinc molecules. The binding of the spike protein to ACE2 has the potential to release zinc molecules, an ion that causes DDP43 to assume its pathological prion transformation. So you realize what they're saying is the spike protein is the key. Like they're always the analogy they're using, right? So it is literally the very thing, the binding of that protein to your ACE2 has the potential to release the very thing that causes this to assume its pathological prion transformation, which leads to all the same things we're talking about. It's every single time you dig into this stuff, every time, it leads to the same. It's very obvious that this is either the most coincidentally perfectly problematic thing we've ever seen, or it seems quite clear that somebody in some label has engineered or tailored this to be a very specific thing. I'm not even specifically talking about a bioweapon or the virus. I'm just simply saying that from every direction here, we are watching that. Now, those things are not to be dismissed, understand. I've talked about that at the beginning of all this. I've just been hyper-focused on this specifically because this needs to be stopped now, regardless of where it came from. But if you want to understand more about that discussion, whether, you know, the history of the bioweapon discussion or any of the stuff, I've gone way deep in that in the beginning of all this. In any case, jumping over to another very important discussion. If you want to know more about that, please, please, please continue researching. Because right now, this is a bubbling up story that they're trying to push back down. And the reality is we have every reason, even Pfizer themselves, to question whether people like this mother are losing a child because of things that they hid from you intentionally. It's pretty sick. But remember that the PCR test, which, by the way, I might be speaking at a PCR rally here in Tennessee. I'll be letting you guys know if that is going to be happening. But this is the linchpin. This is the linchpin to the illusion, because they know that this is something that is being used to push the illusion. We know this. They know this. I wanted to bring this, just to include this again, for when you talk. This is the epidemic that wasn't discussion. I've been on Web Archive, just in case. I'll go over the part of that when we get to it. But the idea that this is something that they've known, that the PCR can be used to create these illusions. They know this stuff. Now, James Lyons Weiler, who I've interviewed, I highly recommend you check out. He says, this is blatant fraud. There is no two ways about it. One PCR cycle threshold for COVID-19 cases, another for vaccine breakthrough infections. Well, we've heard about this breakthrough infections discussion, right? Well, what they're saying is, well, people got vaccinated, but then they got sick again. And these are breakthrough. Well, it seems pretty damn common if you ask me. And we just went over why that might not even be exactly what's happening, but who cares, right? So the reality, though, and the really important part is what James Lyons Weiler showed. This is really important. He shared this link. It's right here in his tweet. All this will be included. Now this, make sure I don't lose that point right here. COVID-19 vaccine breakthrough case investigation. Okay. So again, something that they're investigating while they are giving it to you. Isn't that great? These are always things, as even Hodgkin said, everyone will point out, if you actually listen to anybody honest, these are things that would have been discovered had they done this the right way, right? That, oh, well, look like this happens, or looks like that. Look, anaphylactic shock. Oh, looks like we're getting cases of strokes. Like, these are all things that would have come out in a real process that we did not have. Anyway, COVID-19 breakthrough case investigation. Yay, we're on it while it's being administered. Hooray. But here's the point. They're telling you that they're going to use PCR test. I think it listed it. And it doesn't, the point is, it's the PCR test is being used to aid in this evaluation. Oh, it's right there. For positive PCR test results. Okay. Here's what they're telling this investigation that they have to do with the PCR cycle threshold. Clinical specimens for sequencing in regard to breakthrough cases should have a PCR cycle threshold of under 28. Well, that's weird, because right now their people are being told that they have to keep their cycle threshold above 40, or at least 240 in regard to COVID-19 cases. Now, why would that be? Well, primarily, in my opinion, because the cycle threshold set that level will guarantee false positives. Now, on that note, since we are talking about it, and since I've played it recently, it's still important to make sure you do not forget that this is not new. Dr. Fauci talked about this in a podcast in the middle of 2020. What he's talking about here in this clip is cycle threshold. And the discussion of if you go over 35 cycle threshold, that your results become almost, the replication competence is minuscule, is what he says. Meaning that you do not get what you're looking for. That it's not replication competent, meaning it doesn't work. So why then did the entirety of this country use basically 40 to 45 all the way until 2021? Listen to it for yourself and ask yourself how it's possible that Fauci can state this, know this, and yet let it continue for, I guess, at least 6 months after this. And still to this point, by the way.
Evolving into a bit of a standard that if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, that the chances of it being replication competent are minuscule. Mm.
We've shown this many times. And since we're pointing it out, why don't we make sure you understand that, remember the whole discussion about, that's frustrating. Oh, that's incredibly frustrating. Tell me that didn't affect. Oh, you're kidding me. Why is it doing that? God darn it. Hold on. That is so frustrating. I'll find it. Hold on. In general, I mean, I'll get the point where I had it. Hold on. I don't know why it just happened right there. I had these lined up and I don't even know what was typed in that search bar. That wasn't even for me. I'm not claiming something happened. I'm just saying that was very strange. Now let me just do this and see. The point is to show you, so you know what I'm doing, that listed on that instructions for use that they directed all their people to look at after they'd let a year go by using the wrong cycle threshold, right? Well, even that document made it quite clear. Oh, and this was one point. This was the first one. In this document, look at what it says right here. Number 6, in the line color drop down, it says right here, under analysis settings, select manual cycle threshold. Okay, so first realize that it says very clearly in this document that people need to be trained how to use this. And are we going to pretend that they trained everybody everywhere using this in Walgreens and wherever else these things are being given? No, of course not. So understand that it's manual, so somebody could add whatever they want. Then it goes on to say, do not change the manual baseline numbers. Oh, that's even great. I'm sure that 18-year-old person, I mean, that's probably not that simple, but the point is there's people in doctor's offices everywhere across this country that have never used these before that have the ability to change even the baseline default numbers. Are we really going to pretend like somebody wouldn't want to make sure this looks bad because they believe it is bad and we're just not taking it seriously? We know that happens. Just so you understand that. So this is manipulatable even at the local level, which I find to be utterly ridiculous. But it's very clear that it's saying within 40 cycle threshold, right here, 40, 40, right? The fact that if we're talking about anywhere over, you are guaranteeing that there will be false positives. Now, when they say under 40 by that, right? That means that you keep going until 40 until you either find nothing or you find something, right? That's how this works. They keep, every time they modify it, it increases the magnification. So if they keep, they're not finding anything and they go, well, this guy's sick, he's clearly coughing or whatever, they'll keep going and they know they can go till 40 because it tells them under 40, which is what's happening. And Fauci just said anything over 35, and by the way, it's pretty much anything over 30 when you really dig into the information, is guaranteed to cause false positives. Even the CDC has, in multiple studies backed by them, have continued to point out that 30%. And that's not correct. Dr. Scoglio, PhD, did this live in front of people, and he's telling you that this is upwards of 90% false positives, 95, when it's between 40 and 45 cycle threshold, which is what is happening. Now, remember, this is the update. When they sent this out, this was the instructions for use where they said, here's what you're supposed to be using. after a year of not informing them about how to use the test they used to control the whole pandemic, because that totally adds up, right? We're going to give you the instructions and updates after we've let you use this thing without telling you. I mean, yes, they gave the instructions, but clearly the point is you need to be trained, is what that says itself. Did they do that? We're going to pretend they hired PCR trainers to go to every single clinic in every part of the world? No, it's the same reason they're not actually investigating all these cases. They don't have the resources. That's a no-brainer. Now this, gosh darn it. I know there was other things I was going to show you in here. It's really frustrating to me. Goes on to say, it just, you know, it's very clear that it's 40, 40, 40, 40 cycle threshold is everywhere. I believe that was it. Who knows? Maybe something else I was going to show you in there. But in the interest of time, there's plenty of important things in there you should look at for yourself. But in the interest of time, here's the last one. Now, this is from the WHO. So that's the FDA we just showed you. Check out what the WHO is saying. Now, remember, the WHO was the one that stated that you need to do your due diligence and look at the instructions for use. Well, isn't that interesting? So if the WHO is telling them use 45, and I don't want to say, it doesn't say under, right? It just says 45. And you'll find that pretty consistent throughout this document, 40 to 45. Well, again, in the interest of time, I've shown you this before. Now ask yourself, if Fauci can know in the middle of 2020 that anything over 35 is guaranteed to be not replication competent, his words, how is it possible that WHO can put this out when they're supposed to be correcting the problem and reiterate 45 cycle threshold? Anybody explain that? And then remember, going back to the point, explain to me why we're still currently allowing people to use anywhere from 45 down, it would seem, right now. And that's the correction. And yet they come out with this new part where they're going, we're investigating these breakthrough cases. Understand, cases that they don't want to admit to because that shows a problem. Well, we're going to research that by using PCR cycle threshold of under 28. This is huge, guys. This is monumental. And you could thank James Lyon Weiler for pointing this out, PhD. Because what this shows you is that two things. They know that under 30 is what you should be doing, which is what we've been saying from the beginning. As well as the fact that they know they're allowing this to continue at 45. So what does that tell you? If you want to be real about it, it clearly shows me that they are okay with allowing the overblown numbers of COVID-19, and they're clearly trying to make sure they get, at the very least, accurate information about what they don't want you to see. But I argue it's going to be not even close to that. Pretty huge. I don't think they're going to change it at all. I think it's going to continue. Now, on that note, here is more guidance on criteria for assessing a freedom from infection of COVID-19. Now, remember, we've already seen Austria. I've seen multiple locations and their judicial systems rule that the PCR test is not valid for the purpose they're using it for. Now, remember when we said that in the very beginning and we talked about Carrie Mullis and the creator of it, and they all laughed and said, you're such conspiracy theorists. Well, I guess the entire country's all these countries out there are all the same. I mean, it's just such an ignorant thing to do. When somebody makes a valid point, if your response is to call them a conspiracy theorist, you're not a smart person or you've been manipulated, because that is ignorant. What we're talking about here is multiple locations that have done their due diligence and done the research on the PCR test and have ruled in a court of law that this is absolutely illegal, that they're using this to hinder what they shouldn't even be allowed to stop, which is your rights. Here's another one. And yet the media and your government will continue to say that this is necessary and the best gold standard we've ever had. The PCR technology used to test to detect viruses cannot distinguish between viruses capable of infecting cells and viruses that have been neutralized by the immune system. And therefore, these tests cannot be used to determine whether someone is contagious or not. That's the whole point. In fact, remember, on top of that, we know that it can cause false positives. What they're saying here is simply we're assuming that this works all the time, that there's not false positives. What they're saying is even then, when it gives you the note that when you're discovering RNA, that does not mean that you're actually sick. As John Rappaport said from the very beginning, that you could have a speck of the virus in your body. And yes, that's enough to get you sick, but it might not get you sick. The point is that you can have this pass through your body and never get sick. And you were never contagious, and yet they would tell you that you are sick, put you on quarantine, make you take a vaccine that's experimental and clearly dangerous, in my opinion, and is continue and old number of some. I mean, and ask yourself what that psychological aspect does to you. Do you start feeling like you can't smell and taste because you've heard that's what happens? I mean, the idea of psychosomatic things are very well documented. So add to that the huge prevalence of false positives with the level they're using it at, then you get the clear illusion. RNA, it says, from viruses can often be detected for weeks, sometimes months after the illness, but does not mean that you're still contagious. And we just saw them talking about 14 days. So clearly that's not right. Sometimes months afterward. The recommended criteria for assessing freedom from infection are therefore based on stable clinical improvement with freedom from fever, or from at least 2 days, and that at least 7 days have passed since the onset of symptoms. You know, like classic doctor-patient relationship. Oh, I've got symptoms. Oh, here's something to take for that. Oh, you feel better now? Then you're probably good, right? This is classic, especially when you're dealing with something that's arguably less than the flu, when all things considered. The criteria have been developed in collaboration with representatives of the specialty associations in infectious disease medicine, clinical microbiology, hygiene, and infectious control. You know, the classic anti-science conspiracy theorists, right? The specialty associations in specifically infectious disease medicine, right? So there are so many people out there that want to reflexively dismiss this as fake news. Excuse me. And they will. They will, because they won't even look at it, because they've already been trained what to do. How is it possible we can have so much around the world agreeing? Entire regulatory agencies, entire judicial systems that are saying, you're right. And yet our government and our part of our populace continue to just blindly trust authority. It's absolutely staggering to me. Now, I want to reiterate this again, and those that have seen this many times, bear with me, this is important. Faith in quick tests lead to epidemic that wasn't. I've reported on this many times, probably far too early than I should, because nobody will remember that. I was yelling about this in the beginning of the pandemic, and no one's who cares? We all see what's happening now. Even people believe in all this are aware to some degree about the PCR having an issue. We knew this before it ever happened. Faith in quick tests leads to epidemic that wasn't in January 22nd, 2007. And saying that Dr. Brooke Herndon could not stop coughing. I can't talk right now. Could not stop coughing for 2 weeks starting in mid-April. Right? So she suddenly thought, okay, something's wrong. I'm sick. What's going on? Right? Before long, Dr. Catherine Kirkland, an infectious disease specialist at Dartmouth, a specialist, had a chilling thought. She said, okay, maybe this is whooping cough. It's just a possibility, right? So what do? You investigate. Says by late April, other healthcare workers were in the hospital were coughing and having symptoms, which they considered a hallmark of whooping cough. Now, if it was whooping cough, the epidemic had to be contained immediately, right? So they take it seriously. So at the start of this episode, it says it was the start of a bizarre episode of the medical center, what they're calling themselves, the New York Times even, the story of the epidemic that wasn't. For months it went on. Nearly everyone involved thought the medical center had a whooping cough outbreak. Nearly 1,000 healthcare workers in New Hampshire were given a test, PCR test, and then simply furloughed from work based on the results. Results were in. 142 people, including the doctor herself, were told that they appeared to have whooping cough. Thousands were given antibiotics, a vaccine for protection. Hospital beds were taken out of commission, including some of the intensive care. Sound familiar? Then, about 8 months later, healthcare workers were dumbfounded to receive an email message from the hospital administration informing them, guess what? The whole thing was a false alarm. Now, let me ask you something before we even go further. Imagine that hadn't happened. Imagine they said, okay, this seems to be something different. This seems to be serious. Maybe it's a whooping cough variant. Suddenly, let's start giving PCR tests to anybody who has a cough anywhere. Let's start giving PCR tests to the hospital down the street. They all look like they're sick. What do they get? Uh-oh, they're testing positive. This looks like something very serious. Suddenly, they announce to the world, we think we have a whooping cough outbreak. Suddenly, everyone starts testing with the PCR test. That guy's got the sniffles. Let's test that one. Suddenly, they get positives. And suddenly, all these symptoms that look like PCR test, which basically is the flu or the cold, right? Looks exactly like it. The PCR test is telling us positive. Next thing you know, you got other countries closing borders next to them because, wait a minute, this looks like a rising pandemic. Then it just gets out of control. Then you all of a sudden governments start seizing power because they go, we need the power to keep you safe from this. Then all of a sudden it gets sort of fuzzy. Is it really happening? And then they just dig in because we need this power to control this. What about the next whooping cough pandemic? Uh-oh, you see how this could go. You realize that everybody involved in this, including the experts, thought this was happening. Now, bear that in mind. Not a single case of whooping cough was confirmed. with the definitive test, meaning in a lab, growing bacterium. Now, pertussis, which is whooping cough, it says, instead, it appears the health workers probably were afflicted with ordinary respiratory diseases like the common cold. It says, now, as they look back on the episode, epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists say the problem was they placed too much faith in a quick, highly sensitive molecular test that led them astray. Care to guess what that test was? Infectious disease experts say the tests are coming into increasingly increasing use. This is in 2007. And they may be on the way to get a quick answer and diagnose disease like whooping cough, Legionnaires, bird flu, tuberculosis, SARS, and deciding whether an epidemic is underway. It says there are no national data on pseudo epidemics. Now, why wouldn't there be? I wonder why. Caused by an over-reliance. So there's no data on these exact pseudo epidemics caused by an over-reliance on such molecular tests. According to Johns Hopkins, interestingly enough, it says, but she said pseudo epidemics happen all the time. You wouldn't even hear this from you. If you said this now to the media, they would laugh at you. That's not true. We would never let that happen. They're so high on themselves today. But that's false. Here's one. And according to this doctor, they happen all the time. It says the Dartmouth case may have been one of the largest, but it was by no means an exception. Think about that. It says there was a similar whooping cough scare at Children's Hospital back in Boston. Same kind of thing happened. Definitive test, though, did not find it. Interesting. The problem, it says, it's a problem. We know it's a problem. And this is the most important part outside of the PCR test. She says, my guess is that what happened at Dartmouth is going to become more common, meaning using a PCR test to diagnose, which leads to a false pandemic or epidemic in this case. Many of the new molecular tests are quick, but technically demanding, meaning they didn't train these people. That's clearly one point right now. And each laboratory may do it its own way. Yep, exactly what we're talking about. These tests called home brews are not commercially available. They weren't then. And they are no good. They are not good estimates of their error rates or not good. No good error. So they don't know how much their error does this not. This is exactly what we're talking about. They don't even know how much. They don't know the false positive rate. Well, what do you know? But there are, but it says, but their very sensitivity makes false positives likely. The New York Times was calling this back out in 2007. And when hundreds of thousands of people are tested, or maybe millions, as occurred at Dartmouth in regard to hundreds of thousands, false positives can make it look like there's an epidemic. What do you know? This should be the most talked about article in everywhere right now. I pointed this out in the very beginning of the pandemic. It says you're in a little bit. I'm just going to jump to the point. Is of course leads to the question: why rely on them at all? Good question. At face value, obviously they shouldn't be doing it. Thank you, Dr. Pearl. I wonder what Dr. Pearl says today. Where is Dr. Pearl? Let's have him. I would love to hear him stand up and talk about the virtues of PCR testing, so I could point out the fact that he said that shouldn't be happening back before he was propagandized by COVID-19 propaganda. So funny, but it says. She said, often when answers are needed and the organism like the pertussis bacterium is finicky and hard to grow in a laboratory, you don't have great options. Well, that's fine. That's fine. As long as you don't then use those poor options to arrest people and remove their rights. Waiting to see if bacteria can grow. Now, here's the real point. Just in case you thought I was wrong. At Dartmouth, the decision was to use a test PCR, even with the acronym, because it was so early, for polymerase chain reaction. It's a molecular test that until recently was confined to molecular biology laboratories. That's kind of what's happening. That's the reality out there. We're trying to figure out how to use these methods that have been, and it led to the epidemic that wasn't. The story. Now, if we can't see the relation to that and how they know it's happened before, that the over-reliance on this test was the very reason this happened, and yet here we are, over-reliance on the same test with the same false positive rate that's leading to another fake pandemic. That's exactly what's happening. Now, it doesn't mean, like in this case, that there's zero. It definitely could mean that, and I've been talking about that from the beginning, but it doesn't have to mean that. The point is, there's something happening here. There's an illusion happening here. And we need to understand that this is not even new, that they know this. In fact, I would argue they chose this for the very purpose of allowing breathing room, which they clearly need. Now, where are we on time here? Thank you all for being here today and joining in. I appreciate those that are on Super U. I'm really excited that it looks like we're rolling fine and everyone's there. It's very exciting to see this up and going, guys. Please make sure you sign up. Make sure you no longer go to YouTube. But where were we? Oh, yeah, I was deciding on the time. Okay, you know what? I'm going to run through this quick. Now, the reason I was just thinking about what I was going to do next is only because I wanted to reiterate this again, only because it was in a really long show in the middle, and this relates to this, what we're talking about. Now, this is coming from this actual document here, or this article, with all the source material. You can find it all for yourself. I just found this blog, which I wasn't familiar with until I saw this article, to be very, and I had to translate it from another language, but I found it to be very well, you know, the way they describe all this stuff. Now, just cutting to the chase here. This is documentation. It says uncertainties, even about the intrinsic quality of their products, their manufacturing processes, the batches marketed, according to official documents published by the European Medicines Agency. And this is in regard to the vaccines. Pfizer is specifically. It says, cutting to the chase here, let's see. It says, she recalls that the studies concerning these vaccines are not finished since they extend from 2021 to 2024. We've already talked about this way in the beginning. That people try to argue, well, that's just how long they had to try to complete it, which is just silly. But even if you believe that, this document makes that completely not true, undeniably. But it's showing you that right now the studies are still ongoing. And that's something we need to understand. That we are currently in a trial. It says, then it reveals undoubtedly unprecedented and exclusive that the official documents published by the European Medicines Agency, which you can find in this document, the links are all here, underline the insufficiency of the evidence also concerning the quality of the active substance of the drugs themselves or the excipients. Their point is that there are active ingredients in these vaccines that they have not even confirmed are safe, and you can see it in this documentation, that they have until 2023 to confirm that. I wonder how they're testing that out, as well as the manufacturing process or even the reproducibility of the batches themselves, meaning they don't know if the one you have in this store versus the one they made over there is even the same efficacy or the same product. The AMM is for a drug what a great card is for a car. Marketing authorization is granted when a drug is proven its quality, efficacy, and safety. It says in this case, is the case of these vaccines against COVID-19, the four MAs issued are so-called conditional MAs. Now think of like the emergency authorization in regard to the United States. They are temporary. The period of validity does not exceed 1 year because they are obtained on the basis of incomplete data. That's a direct quote from the EMA. To obtain a five-year MA, a standard one, the laboratories concerned must provide completed files for, quote, studies in progress and studies planned for the years to come. Throughout this development, close and coordinated surveillance between manufacturing laboratories and health authorities is organized through their regular discussions. The conditional MA is reassessed annually based on input and critical analysis of additional data provided and collected over the full year. So the reassessment is based on the data they're collecting from you. Let's continue. The conditional marketing authorization is the EMA, the European Marketing Agent Authorization. It was obtained by the accelerated centralized procedure. It allows simultaneous marketing in 30 different countries. Studies on these four vaccines are therefore still ongoing. Now, it lists all of them, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, but let's read just the first one, which I did last time. Secondly, the planned studies all studies submitted during the MA application are summarized in the EPAR, European Public Assessment Report. The latter is published on the website of the European Medicines Agency, the EMA. Planned studies, not yet carried out, are also included. Here's what it says. The schedule, which runs from 2021 to at least 2024, depending on the vaccines against COVID-19, is defined as the annexes of the conditional MA and in the published EPARs. For example, the Pfizer biotech vaccine obtained the European conditional marketing authorization on December 21st. And the deadline, that's 2020, the deadline for submitting confirmation of the efficacy, safety, and tolerance of the vaccine is set at the month of December 2023. So you could argue the deadline, meaning that they've already done it, but that's not true. It's easy to look that up, easy to find out. So we're talking about confirmation of whether they're safe, effective, and tolerant by December 2023. The Moderna vaccine obtained its marketing authorization on January 6, 2021. The deadline for that same confirmation, December 2022. AstraZeneca, March 2024. Johnson & Johnson, December 2023. But to date, it says, and this is where the new and exclusive revelation is undoubtedly, another deadline has been set for these four vaccines. This time, this time limit no longer only concerns the clinical trials in progress, but also the, quote, quality evidence for the active substance of the finished product. A deadline for proving the quality evidence of the active substance of the finished product. It says itself, that is to say the intrinsic quality of the product sold and administered to people. And they haven't proved that yet, according to these documents. Thirdly, it says, and this probably seems unprecedented, the official documents published also underline the incomplete nature of the evidence related to the quality of the active substance and the excipients, the ingredients of the manufacture process of the reproducibility of the batches. It says the deadline for submitting additional evidence concerning the quality of these active substances of the finished product, that is to say the vaccine authorized and sold, is set to the month of July 2021 for biotech, June 2021 for Moderna, June 2022 for AstraZeneca, August 2021 for Johnson & Johnson. Is that interesting? Here's just for biotech and Pfizer. March 21st, the laboratory must provide, this is by March 2021, the laboratory must provide additional validation data in order to confirm the reproducibility of the manufacturing process of the finished product. Additional validation data, which has not happened. By July 2021, the laboratory must provide the missing information. Like, there's no way to misunderstand this, guys. This isn't something that just happened the next day. By July 2021, they need to provide what they have not yet provided, which is what gave them this. Complete the characterization of the active substance of the finished product. Quote, strengthen and control strategy, including the specifications of the active substance and the product finished, with the aim of ensuring consistent product quality. Glad we won't know that until July 2021. It says, in order to confirm the efficacy and safety of the vaccine, they will have to submit the final clinical study report for the randomized placebo-controlled observer study, blind study, by December 2023. Now, it shows you these. I did say that I was going to do this quick, and I'm totally not, but I guess this is the last part. Well, in any case, the point is, it's quite obvious that their own information coming from the medical, coming from experts themselves speaking out, but coming from the European Medical Agency, it seems pretty clear to me that this stuff is ongoing. And here's another point. Rare side effects from COVID vaccines that have been seen 15 years ago. Another discussion of the animal studies and why they were skipped or rushed, I think this is exactly why that was happening. Norwegian biologist Gro Amden writes this in an email to Science Norway. She's a professor at Arizona University. She says studies on animals showed this, the spike protein issue, in experiments on monkeys, rabbits, and mice. The problem became an obstacle for research and development of gene therapy. The AstraZeneca vaccine against COVID uses the so-called, this is specifically about adenoviral vectors, to deliver the vaccine in our bodies, which that doesn't mean we're not talking about the spike protein, but this is specifically in regard to adenoviral vectors, which is what the AstraZeneca vaccine uses. What she's telling you is that for 20 years, they've known this risk, and they found that out with Jesse Gelsinger. And when this kid died after being tested with this, they all went quiet and waited 20 years, apparently. And now they're trying it again as if we never knew that, or we didn't know there's a danger here. And they're hiding that. That's what she's saying. We all knew this. She says several cases of unusual and serious cases of clotting combined with low levels of platelets and bleeding after the vaccine. This is what she said, but causes Norway and to pause these, which we already talked about. But she says, this is actually interesting, just to reiterate. This is what I keep telling you guys. And even the U.S. government has admitted and used the term vaccine-induced immune thrombocytopenia, meaning this is not some coincidence that we can't prove. This is a clear vaccine-induced problem, which has led to multiple deaths. Far more than they say we can prove. Let's put it that way. Norwegian and German researchers recently explained what happened to the patients in a paper published in the New England Journal of Medicine. You know, that fake news, anti-science conspiracy rag, right? Well, they're telling you they have given the syndrome a name, VITT, vaccine-induced immune thrombocytopenia. It's not a causal link. It's not a hypothetical. They're telling you that this vaccine caused thrombocytopenia, which we know killed multiple people. Published in the New England Journal of Medicine. But if you talk about this on Twitter, people will call you a conspiracy theorist. Think about how crazy that is. This is a fact, undeniable, verified fact. These vaccines, specifically Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, at the very least, are clearly causing blood clots. But the point is, the spike protein is obviously what I think is causing this, and that's in more than just those two. I think Pfizer has been shown to be far, far, far more damaging. It says, but it turns out this condition hasn't been entirely unknown, at least for for those who spent years doing the research on these. Oh, you mean like the NIH, Dr. Fauci, and all these? Yep, exactly. They all know that this is here. So why did they choose to ignore it? Why wasn't people told? This is what would be called informed consent, you understand, right? You have a risk. If you know that, then you have to sign, you have to read the information and understand that you have a risk of using these adenoviral vectors that you could have blood clots. Yep, nope, no one was told that. No one was talking about this. If you discuss blood clots, you're a conspiracy theorist. She says the syndrome was known. Then she says, when the condition now is presented as a mystery, she wonders if the knowledge had just been forgotten. Well, that's very kind of you. If these people just forgot something that's killing people right now, why are they where they are? Why are they in this position? Because the people around them clearly are okay with either that incompetence or that crime, willful ignorance. In any case, let's be honest and pretend that they forgot anything. This science is there. They knew it was there. They chose to hide this from you, in my opinion. It also goes on to point out that it causes low platelets in mice. In neighboring country in Canada, another doctor has been thinking about the same thing. Why? Because it's there and they all know it and your government's lying to you. Ottoman's a professor at Queen's University and an expert in all things blood related. You know, an expert, right? Someone's telling you, we knew this. They're lying. Well, she's not saying that, but that's the point. In the 90s, the adenovirus for gene therapy was considered the next big thing, but it killed Jesse Gelsinger, and they all went quiet about it. It is important to note that these replication deficit viruses, or the spike, specifically the adenovirus is what they're talking about, can elicit innate immune responses, which can affect platelets and coagulation. We can clearly see, even in her own study, that this is the case. And they knew this 20 years ago. Now, I recommend you read this for yourself. I don't want to go all over all this stuff again, but the point is simply this, that Pfizer knows they're having problems and they're hiding this stuff and clearly pointing out other people's problems. Let me just, this is just the main point here. It says, even though the manufacturer does not seem to be eager to go into a lot of detail relating the death count, recent data shows that high fatality rates may be caused by the flaws in mRNA technology, which hasn't been widely used before COVID-19 pandemic. 40% of mRNA is unstable and can produce random and harmful instructions in the body, according to their information. That's what they found. A leaked document from the European Medicines Agency describes in a Le Monde article, and you can look this up for yourself, the links will be included, revealed serious problems that Pfizer was facing while switching from lab test to full scale, you know, hypothetical into putting it into your arm, right? According to the documents, there was a significant loss of RNA integrity during the process. That's what they're telling you. And what they're saying is that doesn't only mean low concentration, but it says active substance, but also that more than 40% of the mRNA is unstable and can produce harmful effects. That's what we're seeing today. Interesting how the leaked documents only get shown when another outlet talks about it, instead of the European Medicines Agency, whose job is supposed to be to inform you and keep you safe, hides this from you. Because that's not what they're there for. They're another captured agency. The reality is we know all this stuff and it's all out there. It's just a matter of whether you choose to look at it. And remember that Pfizer has been a habitual offender, persistently engaging in illegal and corrupt marketing practices, bribing physicians, and suppressing the very thing that we're concerned about, adverse trial events or results. This has been reported over and over and over, with $4.6 billion paid out, 71 records of crimes from Pfizer. Most importantly, off-label unapproved promotion of medical products, $3.3 billion, False Claims Act, all these things, you know, safety-related offenses over $100 million, right? These are things that they charged with, found guilty of, lying about safety, lying about what products can do. Well, let's pretend like we're just going to trust them today, right? And Thomas Massie points out, former director of the CDC is now the CEO of the foundation that funds factcheck.org. No big deal there, right? Roughly 15% of said foundation's assets are J&J stock, Johnson & Johnson, right? This is the point. these fact checkers are working for the people that they're supposed to be holding to account, I guess. In any case, remember that even the people we're supposed to be listening to, the new Oxford study confirms that the spike in infections are happening following the vaccinations. But they don't want you to know any of this stuff, guys. They just don't. And all this was what I showed the other day. I just wanted to try to get through this quickly because I wanted to reiterate this. But the fact that in the FDA's own documentation in regard to these vaccines, it says very clearly, if I decide not to get this Pfizer vaccine, it says it's your choice to receive or not receive it. Should you not receive it, it will not change your standard medical care, except that's literally not true. And we all see this happening. We all see that doctors are literally refusing to treat patients who are not vaccinated against COVID-19. We have this literal emergency room physician, somebody who's saving your life potentially in an emergency situation, asking, what do we ethically owe the people that refuse this? Right? That's literally what I'm saying. What ethical duties do we have, if any, to the people that aren't vaccinated? What a bad person. Do no harm, huh? Unless you're vaccinated, right? Unless you don't get vaccinated, you bad. What a gross person. Like, these people are brainwashed. Your job is to lit your Hippocratic oath, and you're going to go, if I have any obligation because they didn't get vaccinated, they didn't get a sticker like me. This is a doctor? Good God. Well, as they say, unvaccinated people can start to grow resentful as the vacation season nears. God, they're desperate. And they did a study. A study says. What do you mean a study? You mean like a poll? What kind of study, a scientific study? This is why people do what they think will get their funding. Let's do a study about whether people are unhappy with vaccines. That's a poll. That's like saying, what do you think? How do you feel? That's some science right there. Good thing our tax dollars are going to fund that kind of science instead of, you know, whether or not vaccines hurt each other when you're taken at the same time. And, you know, who cares about that? Are you happy right now? Science. But the point is, are we really going to pretend like, first of all, the unvaccinated people are the ones that are currently locked down? Yeah, right. The people that are not believing this are the ones that have been going out since the beginning. The people that are right now in the park. The people that are right now going out with their friends. So if anyone's resentful, it's the people that have had to do that because they blindly trust their government. We've already seen the videos. Guy marching through the store. Why doesn't she have to wear a mask? We all have to wear a mask. It's like, okay, what are you upset about, dude? Are you mad about the fact that she's putting you at risk, even though it's not what's happening? Or are you mad that you're doing it and she's not? Like a 6-year-old child stomping around going, I have to do what she does. This is a ridiculous argument. This is a desperate plea to get you to think again about, well, I might not be able to travel if I don't do this terrible thing they want to force me to do, even though it's illegal. So I'll go do it then so I can travel because I don't want to be resentful. The reality is the other way around, in my opinion. I think it's quite apparent, but they're desperate. Very desperate. Now, talking about the vaccine, this is from GreedMed Info in regard to Europe, right? So we're talking about the U.S. pretty predominantly, but here's the report from GreedMed Info from the European database, sort of like VAERS. 7,766 dead. In VAERS, understand, we're talking about reports, not necessarily verified, but the point is that even if the U.S. were talking only 1%, it's reasonably similar. I forget the exact number. I've reported this before in regard to Europe. In any case, it's a lot of reports. 7,766 dead, 330,218 injuries. That is pretty incredible. Now, here's a report. You can look at it for yourself. The links are included. You can look at the actual link and look it up for yourself. Here is the update from the Defender as of today. Significant jump in this week in reported injuries. Deaths after COVID vaccine. I wonder why. I wonder if it's because more have been given and more are being going out and more people are sitting with this, right? A week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and things continue to happen. Isn't that interesting? I wonder if there is some credence to the long-term effects, but in regard to the vaccine and how it's clearly hurting people after quite a period of time. And of course, after it goes past a couple of days, they always go, well, that's not the vaccine. We don't know for sure. But Fauci will tell you within 45 days is a valid point to have an adverse reaction. He said that right on a recent show, but I guess what the doctor says versus what the media says, I guess we just trust the media, right? I'm not even saying trust Fauci. I'm laughing about the fact that even they don't trust the narrative is the narrative. The narrative is the gospel. So if Fauci goes against the narrative, they still cite the narrative. Isn't that funny? Like, it shows you how clear this is. And it's just fun. It's dogma. It's a cult. It's gospel. Now, as always, doing a great job, the Defender, showing you showing you the recent updates of what's going on. VAERS data released today showed 118,902 reports of adverse events following COVID vaccinations, including 3,544 deaths. 1%, right? Times it by 100. That's more likely what we're looking at. And 12,619 serious injuries between December 14th, December 2020, and April 23rd, 2021. So the data released today by the CDC on the number of injuries and deaths reported by VAERS. Where was I here? Just lost my place. Reported by VAERS following the COVID vaccine showed a significant jump in reports of injuries and deaths compared with the last week's numbers. VAERS, early Friday, VAERS makes public all vaccines, injuries. I'm trying to jump to the point here. But in any case, I didn't highlight this earlier, but I read through it. There's something I wanted to point out. Well, in any case, first of all, just recognize this is the breakdown, so you can actually see it for yourself. The links are in here. I've always shown them. It's not hard to find. Look it up for yourself. Take the time. Understand it. In the U.S., 222 million people have had vaccine doses. This includes 97 million doses of Moderna's vaccine, 117 doses of Pfizer, only 8 of Johnson & Johnson, right? So the reason I think it's quite clear that they don't want to focus on Pfizer is because that's the majority, 117 million. 97 million, Moderna, also mRNA, right? The point is, when they pick out 6 cases and pretend like they're doing their due diligence on Johnson & Johnson, but then rush it right back into use, it's clear that there's not real safety due diligence happening. It's not. As we talked about before, and that's actually what's in the first part of this article, it's quite obvious that there is a huge issue that no one's talking about. That the information from Pfizer, and actually that it says right here, 39.4 deaths per 1 million doses in regard to some 3 to 5 times higher. That's Pfizer. 3 to 5 times higher than just the reports for either AstraZeneca or Johnson & Johnson. There's the graph for you right there. That's crazy higher. Look, Pfizer, Moderna. Look at the numbers. Why are they not concerned about that? I think there's an obvious answer there. Something's going on. Oh, where was I? Here we go. Now it says, of the 3,544 deaths, 25%, a quarter of them occurred within 48 hours of vaccination, 17% occurred in 24 hours, and 40% occurred in people who became ill within 48 hours, meaning that they clearly got sick right away, and then, you know, a week later they die, or something, some variation therein. This week's data includes 3 reports of deaths among teens under 18, right? So the very people that are completely at zero risk, according to the CDC, are dying from this vaccine. Let that sink in, including a 15-year-old, one 16-year-old who died unexpectedly from a blood clot 11 days after receiving the first Pfizer dose, a 15-year-old female died of cardiac arrest after receiving the second dose of Moderna's vaccine, a 15-year-old male died of cardiac failure. Weird how it's pretty cool. It's the similar things, right? 2 days after. Guy, this is horrifying to me. We see what's happening. It's just crazy that this is even continuing to me, and we can see so clearly what's going on. Double checking this.
Receiving this.
Here we go. Just making sure. I mean, did we see the cardiac arrest, the blood clots, the thrombocytopenia over and over and over and over from people that get it and then right away get this thing. And we're going to go, oh yeah, sometimes it just naturally pops up like that. Yeah, right. It's just... it is insane the kind of equivocation and the kind of mental gymnastics we're seeing from people. 21% of deaths were related to cardiac disorders. 21%. 54% of those who died were male. 44% were female. The average age of death was 75.3, and the youngest deaths reported included 15-year-olds. Now, I actually have one that's lower than that, and that makes me really sad. We'll get to that in a minute. 120 reports of Guillain-Barré syndrome. That shouldn't be, exactly what happened with the swine flu vaccines. We've seen this before. 33,000 reports of anaphylactic shock. Jesus. But don't worry though, because free things, and we'll let you, we'll coerce you into this. This is not a joke. This is the Associated Press. Free beer, marijuana, donuts, savings bonds. a chance to win an all-terrain vehicle. Places around the U.S. are offering incentives to try to energize the nation's slowing vaccination drive and get reluctant Americans to roll up their sleeves. Do you realize what this shows you? This is the majority showing its face, guys. They've got a third. That's it. The majority out there is going, screw that. And they keep acting like, it's this and it's that, and we're pausing. We have infrastructure problem. Like this, remember in the beginning when they were trying to pretend like they just couldn't get enough? Clearly, they're lying to you. We don't want this thing. 66% of Americans right now are making it clear that we don't want this thing. At the very least, we don't know what's going on, and we've heard weird things, and we've seen science that counteracts what the media is saying, and we're just going to wait a minute because we don't trust you guys and have decades and decades and decades of reasons to not trust you guys. But yeah, here's some beer. Here's some marijuana from the government that has still arresting people for marijuana. Do you realize how desperate they are? There are places right now in this country that are currently putting people in prison because the federal government says it's illegal and dangerous. And yet here they are turning around and going, well, we'll give you marijuana because vaccine. It just makes me laugh how as I keep saying, they really think they underestimate our intelligence more than I've ever seen before. But they don't care how stupid they look. Right? I mean, this is the point. This is why I keep telling you that this is like a desperate last sprawling effort. This has been so ham-fisted and rushed that it must be that there's some kind of reason that they needed to go now. That they're going to say, here's something you can have that we've been trying to attack our entire existence because this vaccine's not something that we're trying to push for any weird reason. It's like, kills me. Free rides and beer incentives are added to the vaccine drive, right? Again, because it's totally smart to have a beer after you have this experimental injection that could infect you in all sorts of weird ways that we're still finding out. Right. But as you can see, this Tuesday, April 20th, the photo, a man wearing a cannabis costume hands out marijuana cigarettes in New York, a Joints for Jabs event. They had a name in New York, of course, not surprising, where adults who showed their COVID-19 vaccination received a free joint. This is so coercive. I mean, this is an attempt to get children or young adults to do this just so they can have some weed. And this is so incredibly ridiculous. I mean, look, he even looks like he's dressed up like Uncle Sam for crying out loud. They have no shame. I mean, this is pretty damn pathetic. And guess what? I will promise you there's plenty of people that are in the middle, right? They didn't want this thing because they don't really care. But they said, well, it's joint. Why not? I'll go out and get that. Why not? It's just a vaccine. I get it. We've got it when I was a kid, right? They're not watching the media. They don't know what's going on. You got a whole portion that they just coerced and manipulated into getting an investigation, a currently experimental unapproved vaccine that could later hurt them for the rest of their lives. But here's a joint. Unreal. And as somebody points out, off to the wedding reception at Krispy Kreme, it says she didn't get to wear, this is actually looks like the New York Post. She didn't get to wear her wedding dress because of the pandemic, so she put it on to get her vaccine. Yuck. This is the kind of cult-like mentality that we are seeing. And it's alarming me. Like, it's really crazy. This is scarier than the political cults. Right? Than the two-party illusionists who are desperate and are willing to like literally attack somebody because of their politics. This is getting crazy. Like, it's a monumental event. Like, this is some kind of thing. Like, they're going to frame this on their wall and be like, that was the day I got the vaccine. Like, this is how they're acting. And it's crazy scary because this is the kind of radicalization we see in war. Now, here's another article from The Defender. This week with Mary and Polly, India's health ambassador dies one day after the vaccine, which we already shown you. I just want to include this because they do a great job of keeping you up to date on a lot of different things. Now, this is a breakdown of a few different points and a video worth watching, but I just want to remind you guys, which we already talked about, that, where was it? The link in here. By the way, that's how you could find links on my channel if you wanted to try to find them. If you didn't know where the link was, look a word up, search for it. But as I already showed you the other day, remember, India's health ambassador, India right now, who is clearly, I remember this was the point we showed you, how they were estimating they already had 50% herd immunity. before everybody because they were one of the first ones to really rush this in, getting the vaccine going and everything else. And people right now are having all kinds of adverse events. As they reported, 75% of the deaths and adverse events are happening within 3 days of the vaccine. And then he takes the vaccine and dies. And now the U.S. government is going, here's more vaccine, because clearly you need more vaccine. It's like, what in the world's going on? Because they're just going to say, well, it's all COVID-19. That's what's damn. And Americans who believe that are all they see is India chaos because COVID-19. No. There's something far more nefarious going on. Now, here is the one I was telling you about earlier. And this is sad. This is. Where are we here? Let's just go down the line. Birth defects. Where was it? So the write-up was death. Allergies, none. Extended hospital, none. There, where was that? I know that I'm just missing it right now. Here it is. Excuse me. 2 years old. 2 years old. Right? This is not a joke. This is reported by Veyers. And by the way, this appears to be reported by the doctor, because usually they have a write up like, you know, information. But here's what it just says: 2 year old died in Virginia. No birth defects, no life-threatening issues. Happened 2 days after the vaccine. Why did that child get the vaccine? Good question. This, I believe, is the third infant that I've seen die. One, I believe, was in the trials, and I think the rest are just being given this vaccine because parents are flipping crazy. Ugh. Makes me sick. Cybersecurity expert Dan Kaminsky, dead at 42, as you can see over here. Back to VaxCon at Moscone South. I think I've literally worked at booth 20 feet from here. Injections are now on the show floor. Again, smooth and efficient, well-oiled operation. So proud of San Francisco, Kaiser Permanente, for executing like a boss. Vaxed, April 12th. April 26th, dead. Is it possible that he just died after that? Sure, certainly possible. Well, here it says, confirm the news, citing diabetic ketoacidosis, a serious diabetic complication and a cause of death. Could be. But I find it pretty difficult to continue to ignore how many people continue to die within weeks of this vaccine. I find that almost impossible to ignore. Here's something that might shock you or might not, as Whitney Webb shared with me. Or I think maybe, yeah, I think she shared it with me. Yeah, actually, she sent it to me in a Signal message. But it says, in late 2020, Pfizer started a blood clot awareness ad campaign. Well, that's interesting. This has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that COVID vaccines cause fatal blood clots. No, this is simply because Pfizer cares about us. Obviously, there's a little bit of sarcasm there, right?
Have many reasons for waiting to go to your doctor right now. But if you're experiencing leg pain, swelling, or redness, don't wait to see your doctor.
Dang it.
If you're experiencing leg pain, swelling, or redness, don't wait to see your doctor.
Interesting. So you mean like all these common side effects we're seeing about the vaccine that you all act like is normal? Like that's the normal one, so don't worry about it, right? So it's funny how in a normal setting, those things happen and they go, oh no, rush to the doctor because you could have a blood clot. But in COVID-19 clown world, they list those as common side effects and act like, no, you have that, you're probably fine. In fact, it's a good sign. That's what they're saying. No, that's a sign that it's working. Go ahead and go back home. Really think about how incredibly ridiculous that is. It's the same things that are before, but now, and this is Pfizer in 2020 warning you about blood clots. Why? Isn't that a little bit interesting?
These could be symptoms of deep vein thrombosis, a blood clot, which could travel to your lungs and lead to a pulmonary embolism.
Yeah, we're seeing that pretty commonly after your vaccine right now.
Which could cause chest pain or discomfort, or difficulty breathing, and be deadly. Your symptoms can mean something serious, so this is no time to wait. Talk to a doctor right away, by phone, online, or in person.
Just make sure we see. Brought to us by Pfizer. Aw, isn't that nice? So Pfizer apparently cared a whole lot about blood clots enough right before this was going on to warn you about blood clots. And then weirdly enough, right after this all starts, we start having an issue with blood clots after vaccines. Isn't that interesting? There's just too many coincidences in this whole process to just completely ignore, right? How stupid. This is event 201, right? That's what these sort of things are. I was just trying to find the exact date on here. I'm sure it's in here somewhere. What a weird site this is. I'm completely continually baffled by how many things that are posted these days coming from the authority figures that no longer include dates. This isn't a good example, but there's articles they put out, CDC documents that literally have no dates anywhere. That used to be absolutely a necessity. You know why I don't think they're doing it? Because they don't like us tracking and following and engaging and being like, oh, this was on April 22nd. Oh, that's when this happened one day later, right? They don't like that. They want you to go, who knows when this was stated? It could have been after that event. So now it makes sense, right? I that's my opinion. But is it not odd that we continually find no documentation? I'm not even using this as an example. It just made me think about it. But in any case, the fact that they're warning you about blood clots before their vaccines were causing blood clots is a little bit too much to take. That's just me personally. And here's Whitney says, I thought she had a comment beneath that, actually. I guess not. I thought she said something funny underneath this. Oh, well. Going forward, here's Thomas. I'm hoping someone out there has had a similar reaction and has advice. I got the first Moderna in March and became violently ill for days, which is what we continually hear. And they act like that's normal. When he's, I mean, violently ill, we're hearing from people that can't leave the bed, who are throwing up every, you know, constantly. There is no stretch of the imagination where that is a normal response to a vaccine. That's crazy. That would be alarming before all this started. And now because mRNA and COVID-19 and massive dogma brainwashing, people are like, yay, I feel good now because I'm getting sick. My doctor suggested I might have had COVID already and been asymptomatic. Think about how crazy that is. So he comes in and he goes, I'm super sick and this vaccine's, I just had a vaccine. And he goes, I don't know. Well, maybe you have COVID. That's probably what makes sense. Like since when do doctors guess based on what they're supposed to think instead of doing their due diligence? He got the second vaccine on 4-1 because his doctor told him, you know, you probably had COVID-19. Now, wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to not get vaccinated if you've got COVID? Good job, doctor. Because these doctors are so brainwashed by the mentality of the vaccine is going to save everything. And they know if they say anything even remotely counter to it, they're going to be attacked and fired. That they just say, yeah, you probably had that thing that doesn't exist. The asymptomatic thing that we know isn't there based on the science. But we're going to pretend like you probably had it because I can't pretend like the vaccine caused it because we know that's not true. Unreal. So he said, oh, well, I got the second one, 4-1. And guess what? Almost immediately felt a rush in his head and body that almost knocked him out of his chair. I mean, there are so many, there is examples of this that we've already talked about. That people are like, I mean, immediately passing out. I was just going to see if I could grab that other one really quickly. I had that video of that person getting the vaccine in their car. Here it is. This is crazy. Now, this is a real example of somebody at one of these drive-through vaccines sites where they like immediately passed out and all they could do is rub his chest. Why? Because they don't have all the necessary medical equipment at these locations, like even the Pfizer documentation says they absolutely have to. Or even the, excuse me, it was the I think it was the UK, but in any case, these documentations from our governments are, they're quietly removing those parts in the new versions. Why wouldn't you need to have all the possible medical, because they know that these sites can't possibly do it. They don't have it. Here's what happens when you might actually die at one of these locations. Yeah, we'll just roll a seat back. That'll help.
Well, I'm not taking that shit.
Oh my god, man. It's crazy.
Wow. He passed out a second time. Right, rub his chest, because that'll help. Right, that's good. Holy good shit. Good medical treatment right there. Look at that. And he is suffering right there.
Oh my God.
That is crazy. You know, and so this is what we're talking about, right? So he got his second shot and almost immediately felt a rush in his head and body that almost knocked him out of his chair. That's so alarming to me. Guys, this stuff is so, there's no reason that we should be trusting that this is what they're telling us it is. The next morning, it says, I woke up with the most severe brain fog I've ever had I'll read it from first person, in my life. And it persists. Some days worse than others. It says today is one of them. Also, I have 5 to 10 seconds of vertigo randomly throughout the day, most of the time when I'm walking, because that's totally safe. What if his job is on a construction site? Well, what are a number of things, right? People are, this is not only is it hurt, damaging, and possibly deadly, this is going to be, what if somebody drives and gets in an accident? Are they going to pretend the vaccine caused it? Of course they won't. Prior to this, I was very healthy and never even knew what vertigo was. I have gone to the doctor because it's infuriating and it's interfering with my work and day-to-day activities. And I am told, get this, all I am told is that it will go away in time. That's what the doctor told him. Because the doctor knows this, right? Because Pfizer told him. Because good doctors listen to Pfizer, right? Because the government told them what Pfizer said, because good doctors listen to their government, right? What is going on? They'll go away in time? How could you possibly know that? This is a doctor, guys. This is why not all doctors are created equal. This is why a lot of these doctors are completely brainwashed by this and scared out of their minds to say anything against this because they see the writing on the wall. Now, of course, the argument they would like to make is, yes, we agree, not all doctors are created equal, and that's why all yours are conspiracy theorists. But that's stupid. I'm not saying that about what they're saying in the mainstream media. I clearly believe that the people that trot them out, most of them probably believe what they're saying. That pediatrician probably believes it because she's been trained her whole life to follow orders, which is what anybody you talk to will tell you that's how medical school goes. If you actually talk back or even try to respond or say you think differently, they will kick you out of the room. When you're in medical school, you're trained to think what they want you to think. You could believe most of it's right, or you could realize that there's a huge political level involved from the pharmaceutical level as from government involved in all of this, including our medical schools. Let's not forget the Flexner Report and the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and how they literally took over our medical system and drove it into a petrochemical pharmaceutical based system. I've written articles about that. That redirected away from homeopathy and everything else to petrochemical pharmaceutical based medicine. That is using what they had, the oil, what they had access to, right? I mean, this is what they would profit from. It's not, and by the way, Rockefeller used a homeopath until the day he died, while he destroyed homeopathic practices left and right, so he would buy his petrochemical pills. It'll go away in time. I wonder where he got trained. Sick. New York Post. They tell you, COVID surge swallowing people in India. Everywhere, people dying in the streets, right? Isn't that what they want you to think? Like, look, China, they're passing out in the streets. I wonder why that's not happening anywhere. Why isn't that happening in Sweden? Why isn't that happening in Florida? I wonder why, right? Well, guess what? It's fake. That is from a gas leak in India from last year. Not surprising, though, is it? New York Post updates its article after incorrectly identifying victims of a prior gas leak. Yeah, oops, we accidentally thought that old image was exactly what was happening today. Because we didn't research it. Yeah, it's not an accident. That's a choice. You choose to find the picture you want it to be, or you rather probably found somebody else who shared it as that and didn't do your due diligence because mainstream media are such great journalists, right? Good God. For the amount of due diligence and research that I do, it kills me that these people are out there lying to you left and right and barely even doing the entry level amount of what is needed to even come close to truth. And it kills me. The mainstream media lie to you. And let's just be clear that regardless of any of this stuff, and regardless of the fact that they're at zero risk, they're already beginning trials for kids under 12 years old, meaning all the way down to 1, 2. We already saw one person die. We already saw a child die in a trial, a 2-year-old, with this exact vaccine. But we're going to continue. Why not? Now, also ask yourself, how in the world is this study safety trial going on if we're pretending that it's approved and completely safe and effective? Children are right now being told to get this. There are right now people under 12 that are being told to get this by their parents because they want to go back to school, wear a mask, not wear a mask, blah, 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 blah. We already know. Everybody knows. And even people like Joe Rogan and Bill Maher are out there going, well, this isn't right. They shouldn't be doing that. And guess what? They do that, and then they get attacked. They get told that they have to walk back what they just said. What do you know? Joe Rogan walks back anti-vaccination comment. Anti-vaccination comment? Joe Rogan, you are a complete sellout if you even for a moment walked back what you said because you know that it was right. Kills me. I never believed that it was. Joe Rogan's just going along to get along, right? That's the point. He's not out there to fight for you. He's not out there to fight for truth. He may try when he is allowed by his Spotify masters, but not, it doesn't really, he will always err on the side of his show and his profit or whatever else is driving him. Because clearly, if he's willing to walk back this very obvious statement, when children have a 0% chance and asymptomatic transmission is not relevant, that you're going to give them something that causes even the smallest risk, meaning you're giving them a risk when they have 0% chance, you are lying to yourself if you're walking that back. You know you were right, and it kills me. But because the masters out there want you not to believe this, and I wouldn't be surprised if he said this just so they could have him walk it back. That's how these things work today. But let's test on 12-year-olds. Let's test on 5-year-olds. Let's test on 2-year-olds while we just killed one in a trial. Because it's all about your safety, right? Well, the point is that there's a lot more happening here than even what we're being shown. And we've told you this over and over. We've shown you this document. We've shown you the fact that this is directly from Harvard and the HHS, Harvard Pilgrim Health. There's even people trying to attack this study now. Is this study even what it looks like? I just saw that. There's new studies coming out, right, or articles right now. Why? Because they see us pointing to this and they go, uh-oh, that won't help our narrative. Quick, let's hire one of these mainstream media stooges to come out and say what we want them to. And they come out and undermine the validity. And yeah, well, it's accurate, but here's why it might not be what you think. Like, that's exactly what they're doing. How pathetic. Well, Health and Human Services and Harvard clearly thought it was valid enough to concern themselves with a study about whether or not this is happening. And guess what they found? Again, in case you missed the beginning of the show. Under their report, I think it was under it was right here. Or no, that's weird. Hold on. Here it is. Under their report, the most important part anyway. I recommend you read the whole damn thing because it's important. But adverse events from drugs and vaccines are common, which I said last time is ridiculous because they'll pretend it's one in a million. Common is the antithesis, the opposite to one in a million, or to common. Common means it's common, means it happens quite frequently, not one in a million. So that right there means the media and the government are knowingly lying to you after they studied to find out the truth and then said, well, we're not going to tell them that. And it says very clearly, fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported. That's just a basic idea that they know this based on their own studies. But he also goes on to point out what it says down here in this recent clip we're going to play. Unfortunately, there was never an opportunity to perform system performance assessments based on that number they found, right? Because why? The necessary CDC contacts were no longer available. Well, that's weird. And the CDC consultants responsible for receiving the data were no longer responsive. So there are multiple requests to proceed with testing and evaluation. Gee, isn't that interesting? It's almost like CDC said, oh, we don't like what you found, so we're just going to stop responding to you. Because that's what truth-seeking regulatory agencies do, right? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the people that's supposed to be... No, they find out that there's a lot happening around these vaccines that they don't want you to see, so they shut down. They stopped responding. They weren't available anymore to proceed with testing and evaluation of this very important finding all the way until today because they care about your safety. Obviously. Pretty ridiculous, don't you think? Well, let's take a peek at this clip. We'll walk through it together from his about 20-minute show today. I highly recommend you watch the whole thing. Doing a great job. Which, by the way, as always, doesn't mean I agree with him on everything he says. but he does a fantastic job pointing this stuff out. I've been following Dell since Vaxxed, which also was a great documentary that's obviously completely validated and far more relevant today than it ever was, right? I recommend you check it out. Let's watch the clip.
He got it up and running, and it worked, and it showed that VAERS was capturing 1%. We can obviously capture all that data or close to all the data. And the CDC didn't jump up and down. They didn't say, thank you, that was a great $1 million well spent. They said, stop answering the phones. Stop answering all emails coming in from Harvard Medical School. This thing is being shut down now. I want you to think about that. The CDC that tells us that their job is to surveil illness in America, to make sure that we are as healthy as we can possibly be. It literally have epaulets because they're part of our military branch to make sure that if there's a bioweapon dropped, we'd be able to collect data, see what's going on, and the data system that would be used. And if there's a vaccine that was rolled out, they didn't want to have it automated because they didn't like what was being discovered when it was automated.
Exactly.
They actually stuck their heads in the sand on purpose.
Now, think about what he's saying right there in regard to the point about VAERS and the idea that it's not verified, right? Yeah, somebody's pointing out in the chat, by the way, Spotify, I should have mentioned that, they deleted my entire catalog from their platform with no notification, no justification, no email. Just people are watching it live stream, middle of the show, gone, just instantly gone. Because they're terrified cowards, right? They don't like the truth. But listen to what he's saying here about the VAERS, right? That we're constantly talking about VAERS is, you know, unverified. It can't be verified because we don't know for sure. And they, as I keep telling you, they love it that way. So everything in this discussion is easily dismissed. They don't ever need to really dive into any of it because we don't. It's not verified. So why not make a system that's verified? Well, exactly. That's what this was. That automated. And his point is the moment they realize, well, we don't like what it's finding when we're not in control of what we can say about it. So let's just not respond. And it never went anywhere. So we're stuck with the one that they point to, but only point to when it doesn't show, like what basically they point to it as a reason we can say, see, we're keeping track and we're making sure you're safe. But then when we point to it and say, but look at all these problems, they go, oh, but it's unverified. I mean, that's on its face stupid. Like, we can see that there's a double standard happening there. So his point is, they chose to keep it this way so they could dismiss it.
That's what makes this following headline so disturbing. This is the New York Times. As millions get shots, FDA struggles to get safety monitoring system running. For now, the much-touted system the government designed to monitor any dangerous reactions won't be capable of analyzing safety data for weeks or months, according to numerous federal health officials. For now, federal regulators are counting on a patchwork of existing programs that they acknowledge are inadequate. Could have been made better, but we cut the funding on that because of small sample size, missing critical data, or other problems.
Now, first, think about the first paragraph there. Think about what I've been saying about the lack of resources for actually following up on the things they're being told and how they keep screaming that that's not true. All the ZMDog nonsensical, fake doctors, in my opinion, out there are, oh, you're so fake. That's not true. There's zero deaths because they've researched them all. And we saw what Kyle Kalinske say that, and they all these different people that are just parroting this Trevor Noah, whatever his name is. There's zero because we know, because they told us, because I'm smart and blindly trust authority, right? Here's what the New York Times says, as you just read. The much-touted system the government designed to monitor any dangerous reactions, the VAERS system, won't be capable of analyzing safety data for weeks or months, according to numerous federal health officials. But let's pretend like they've already looked into every one of them and we totally know for sure. For now, federal regulators are counting on a patchwork of existing programs that they acknowledge are inadequate because of a small sample size, missing data, and other problems. But we're going to pretend like we already know every one of them and we investigated and we're zero deaths. We know for sure. This is what it looks like when you lie about everything. How many times can I say that? When you lie about everything, eventually you're going to turn in a new direction and have to contradict a previous lie. That's what keeps happening because they're lying about everything.
In interviews, FDA officials acknowledged that a promised monitoring system known as BEST, some brand new one, which we could have had back in 2010, is still in its developmental stages. They expected to start analyzing vaccine safety data sometime soon, but likely not until after the Biden administration reaches its goal of vaccinating 100 million people.
That's great. That's great. So we'll make sure we get the system where we can pretend it's valid after we let you, we test this on you, right? Then we can use the system to look back and be like, oh yeah, there were problems, but too late now, you're already vaccinated. It's unbelievable.
Great. After 100 million people, one third of our population have been injected with a totally experimental technology that killed animals in the animal trials.
That's an important point, right? And these are on some cases, not all of them, because some of them were skipped and did them after the fact, which we already pointed out. But in any case, people died. People died in these trials, but also the animals died. And we're acting like this is totally okay.
Be able to have a surveillance system that can tell us what happens after that, not during it. So here's the question, right? Is it still capturing 1%? Now that we know, you know, that this is an experimental vaccine, all the scientists saw that, as we pointed out many, many times, immune enhancement was happening, this issue that was getting animals killed in the animal trials. We knew that we had cut out of the actual safety trials early, just weeks after the second shot in phase three. The FDA puts out an emergency use authorization, which is basically saying only under an emergency, because it's like you're dying of cancer, you should be allowed, because you're going to die anyway, to experiment with your life and take this experimental product.
That is the only real valid explanation for what an emergency use authorization is. It is not like they keep trying to pretend. And Fauci damn well knows that it's like, well, this is a normal process and it's just one step away from approval and we're just going through the process steps. No. Emergency use authorization is a loophole being used right now. We are not in need of this, clearly, because it's not even a real pandemic in regard to the numbers that they're citing. If it's the flu, why do we need that? Right? I mean, especially children. Like and of course, on that note, we also have plenty of other things that could have been emergency authorized that have decades of valid research behind them, including things like vitamin C, vitamin D. God forbid we should make those illegal and yet authorize this brand new experimental unapproved vaccine, because that makes sense, right?
Not approving it. And by the way, every manufacturer will be totally protected from liability because they can't be held responsible. You would think under those circumstances, and by the way, the FDA did said it's critical that all of you doctors really ramp up the monitoring here so that we can catch any issue that might happen. So today I am going to try and cross-reference VAERS to see if we can tell if it's capturing more than 1%, less than 1%, around that. Have we gotten to some figure that the Harvard Medical School could have gotten us to, near 100% back in 2010? Here's how we're going to do that. I want to look at, and these are a couple of different sort of studies and from different perspectives, and I think you'll find this interesting. Here we go. This is in JAMA. This was February 12th, 2021. Reports of anaphylaxis after receipt of mRNA COVID-19 vaccines in the U.S. December 14, 2020 through January 18th, 2021. This is what this article in JAMA goes on to say. And this is from the CDC, the characteristics of reported cases of anaphylaxis following receipt of Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, those are the numbers of people that received it, COVID-19 vaccines. The Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS, so the CDC is saying, here's our numbers, we're trusting it, this is what VAERS has said about these vaccines, that anaphylaxis, now I want you to look in this left column because it's really important. Important. The anaphylaxis reporting rate, cases per million doses administered. So per 1 million cases, VAERS is saying that 4.7 people out of 1 million doses are having an anaphylactic reaction. And Moderna is saying that they're having about 2.5 cases per 1 million. Well, what percentage of that is it? I mean, is that really, are we capturing, is that all the anaphylaxis cases? So there was a study done. And this was also in the same JAMA network paper. This is acute allergic reactions. Now we're in March 8th, acute allergic reactions to mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. There are the scientists and doctors that are involved in this study. What did they study? Here's what they looked at. We prospectively studied Mass General Brigham employees who received their first dose of an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine with follow-up. It started in 12/16/2020 through 12/12 with follow-up through 2/18/2021. Remember, this is just the first shot of each of these vaccines. 60% got the Pfizer, 81% got Moderna. It was what were they looking at? How big was the group? 64,900 employees, a pretty decent study, who received their first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. 25,000, there's the numbers, received the Pfizer, 38,000, the Moderna vaccine. At least one symptom survey was completed by 52,800. So pretty well-enrolled group, 81% of them at least filled out one of the brochures so they could figure out what was going on. And here's what they discovered. Anaphylaxis to the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines is currently estimated to occur in 2.5, as we just read by the VAERS, to 11.1 cases per 1 million doses, largely in individuals with a history of allergy. Allergic concerns contribute to vaccine hesitancy. We investigated acute allergic reaction incidents after more than 60,000 mRNA COVID-19 vaccine administrations. What did they find? Here we go, folks. In this prospective controlled study, where we weren't just trusting if doctors were reporting, but actually had the people getting the vaccines filling out surveys, in this prospective cohort of healthcare employees, 98% did not have any symptoms of an allergic reaction after receiving an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. The remaining 2% reported some allergic symptoms. And here's where it comes. However, severe reactions consistent with anaphylaxis occurred at a rate of 2.47 per 10,000 vaccinations. I want you to read that. Now, I know it's been a long time since we've all been in math, but we should be able to do this. In their study, the rate was 2.47 per 10,000 vaccinations. Do you realize when we had a controlled study, it was 2.47 per 10,000? But when we look at VAERS, it was right about 2.5 per 1 million. Literally 100% difference, right?
That's exactly the point. Because if it was 1%, that's pretty damn spot on, right? So his point is not relying on basically the administration, the authority to tell you what's happening, but instead take it directly from the people that are dealing with this. What he's showing you is that it is 2.4 per 10,000 instead of 2.5 for 10 million, which means that it is damn exact, in my opinion, that what we're seeing right now is 1% of what's really going on. Now he goes deeper into that, and I highly recommend you watch the full clip, which will be in the show notes. Del Bigtree is easily one of the most knowledgeable people on this topic, in my opinion, because he has dedicated his life to fighting against what's going on right now. I remember I first was introduced to him during the Vax documentary. I went actually saw one of the first premieres on that when it was in Sacramento. I got to meet them personally, and just one of a million people. I'm sure don't know him. You know, he lined up and we're shaking everyone's hands, but nonetheless. Somebody who has taken this at a time before. I mean, you imagine he must be really like right now, it must be almost in a positive spin because I think when the vax came out, a lot of people woke up to what he was talking about because people have been talking about this long before that too. But there was so much pushback that it must have felt to some degree like there was a loss there, right? But look at what's happening now. And look at how Dell has come full circle now and showing, you know, he is vindicated on what he's been saying, in my opinion, 100%. I would actually love to hear his opinion. You know, like, what do you feel vindicated today, right? Do you feel like this has vindicated what you've talked about with Vax? And then also, you know, what are the connections between Vax and what we're seeing today? You know, it's a really interesting discussion, you know, and it's such an alarming reality to see that if we're seeing thousands of deaths, that you can easily times that by 100 as 1%. And we realize that we are in a really dangerous path right now. Very dangerous. Oh, and on that note, I forgot, I'm just seeing it in the chat right now. Taylor will be interviewing Del Bigtree in the near future. So make sure you keep an eye out that for TLAV. Going forward, this is one of the things I was mentioning before. And this is the kind of thing where, like, so when we're talking about all these adverse events and the fact that people are now convinced that the terrible things they're experiencing are in fact a positive sign. Now, again, of course, this could be somebody who's faking this, but it does not seem that way when you look at the information on the actual account. Here's what it says. This is a report talking about a report about negative things. And it says, I've had both of my vaccines. And yes, the vaccine does work, as after my first vaccine, I got COVID and pneumonia, landed up in hospital on oxygen, was told if I hadn't been for the vaccine, I would have been in the ICU. So the vaccine does work. I mean, that is the kind of mental gymnastics I'm talking about. And that is so alarming to me, because the point is, she not only is okay with the fact that she got a vaccine that's supposed to protect her from something that she then caught, but then she also got something else, which probably was pneumonia, who knows what else, pneumonia. But the point is, she went to the hospital, was on oxygen. And then they had the nerve to tell them that, oh, the reason you didn't die was because of the vaccine. You know what that sounds like? This is the kind of medical pre-crime thing we're telling you before. Like, oh, well, you know, this thing says you're going to get sick, so we lock you down. And then we say, oh, well, it worked because you didn't get sick. It's like, well, was I ever sick to begin with? Well, who knows? Right? When they tell you the vaccine, and all they have to do is, well, whatever you just experienced, it would have been worse if you hadn't had the vaccine. It's like, what? This is the point of saying reducing symptoms, as if that means anything. How do you even know if that's working? Because you feel sick and you go, well, I'm not dead, so it must have been worse. No. This is the most obscenely stupid thing I've seen this entire time, that people are now acting like still getting COVID and getting sick is how this is working. Here's the actual page. I had my COVID vaccine. As far as I can tell, when you actually look at the account and the people, it looks real. But in any case, that is actually happening. That is real, and people are doing that with this experimental vaccine. As of January 2021, according to the NIH, that's the Moderna, why would you take an experimental vaccine unless you were choosing to take part in some kind of experiment? It doesn't make sense. But if you try to speak out about this stuff, well, then you'll get hit by the fact checkers, right? Because they know what's going on. The fact checkers know, because they're the smart ones, right? Well, let's take a peek at some interesting information. Oh, that's not the right spot. Here we are. Facebook's independent COVID fact checker site, factcheck.org. Guess what? It gets $1.9 billion from the vaccine lobby. I wonder if that influences their direction. What do you think? A so-called independent fact checker website, factcheck.org, is exposed to be funded by the same $1.9 billion vaccine lobby group that it is supposed to check. That's not no surprise, right? I mean, CDC, the mainstream media, all of these groups are funded by Big Pharma. Big Pharma is the very entity that they're supposed to be holding to account, and yet they're the ones attacking people like us who are trying to actually do their jobs, or at least what they pretend their jobs are. Facebook itself using Atlantic Council to decide what's fake news, even though the Atlantic Council is the government. So the government is deciding what government discussions we're not allowed to have. And Facebook calls that independent fact checking. it's just ridiculous. And here's the tweet they're sharing. It's the same point as member of Congress Thomas Massey is pointing out. Not only that, $1.9 billion from the vaccine, they get 15% of that, or they get the money from J&J stock. That is why things like this happen, unless this was completely set up from the beginning. The fact that they get pressured by people with power from the top down that have investments in the same company, whatever it is, and people like Joe just tuck tail and run and just go, okay, I'll walk back my very honest and factually correct statement because Spotify didn't like it, because the government didn't like it, because J&J pulled some strings and the fact checker said you were wrong, and now you don't like it either. Now this, oh, that's right. So this, just to finish off, this is pretty interesting. Another study in the middle of these being used on you to find out the prevalence of this problem after COVID-19 vaccine. Sure wish we had a process where we could figure these out before. Like, good God. It started yesterday. Yesterday. To find out whether this is a problem with the Pfizer vaccine. You know, the one that's totally the safest, according to people that listen to the mainstream media. Even though that's the exact opposite. Well, I looked this up to figure out what this exactly was. Apparently, it's kind of a synonymous term that's used between two terms because they both happen the same. I guess it's, where was it? Right here. So this is the term we're talking about. Perimyocarditis, I guess. And I guess it's kind of synonymous with myopericarditis. But it says that in here somewhere. It talks about how they're basically similar and synonymous. Oh, here. Yeah, right here. Yeah, it says, hence the term is used for both, basically. Both can occur. And the idea is it's inflammation or other problems. And this is actually more specific. It says, it is inflammation of the two layers of the thin sac-like membrane that surrounds the heart. Well, isn't that great? So inflammation of the heart, something that we have clearly continued to see from the same issues with the spike protein, the same idea. We're talking about the same stuff here, guys. And right now, in the middle of their administration of this experimental injection that's not approved, they're testing to see if this is a problem. This is what should have been done in safety trials that they're now testing on you and using that to continue their trials. Hope we all get that point. Now, I was gonna finish on this point. I'm thinking I'm going to just wrap in. I keep putting this off. It's a very interesting discussion. Some new breakthrough treatment for COVID-19. But I think I'm going to do more of like a nanotech discussion about this and talk about this in the future. This was shared with me by F. Doom. I'm sure he wants me to get into it. He's been sharing a lot of good stuff on it. But we will talk about this. But to finish off, really, I just want you guys all to know that the judge who made a huge ruling in regard to what's currently going on about a lot of stuff, in fact. This right here's the article about it. After judgment against the mask requirement, but it wasn't just the mask requirement. There was more to it. But this judge rules against the pandemic restrictions as them being wrong. Family judge ruled against the mask requirement of schools, justified it with the child's best interests. Right? Well, guess what? Public prosecutor investigates the judge because he did so. Think about how alarming that is. The government, I'm just for interest of time, you could research, I'll include all this information. You can look at it for yourself. Here's what, just the last part. I want you to really hear what Robin here had to say about this, because this is what's happening everywhere. And this is what I meant before when I'm talking about comparisons to like wartime, where the radicalization we're seeing is more alarming than we're giving due credit to right now. We are in a really dangerous path where people are being radicalized to where I think we're moments away from people acting violently against other people, which is not very uncommon with our government and our media. But here's what it says. The judge responsible for the sensational verdict in Weimar, which suspended all masks, testing, that's what it was, and social distancing mandates at two Weimar schools due to psychological and physical damage to the children. The lawsuit was initiated by parents themselves. He has now had a, quote, visit from the police. And had his office and his car, his private car, searched for ruling on something, and his mobile phone confiscated. You wonder what they're looking for, right? I bet you they're looking for things that they can call far right or connections to some foreign. You know, they're trying to find something they can use to align with the propaganda narrative. This guy was a Trump supporter, and that's why, right? Why would you search his car and his phone if all he did was his job as a judge, even if he ruled in an unfavorable light? Judges rule wrong and unfavorably all the time. I actually find our system to be quite damn subjective when it comes down to the judge ruling, because they can just rule what they want half the time. Of course, it can be overruled or appealed, I mean, but it happens. But in this case, not in COVID clown world, the judge rules that this is dangerous because the science actually backs that up, and they confiscate his phone. They investigate him and search his car. He's being represented by a lawyer right now, so hopefully something happens. But it says, allow this to sink in. A judge is being officially intimidated by the state in a so-called democracy. due to a correct verdict, and you could disagree, you could even, doesn't matter, to a verdict based on evidence that counters the official propaganda narrative. The point is, guys, this is not a representative government. This is not freedom. This is a totalitarian state in full swing. And we are surprised that UK lawyers are as hushed up as they are. There's a monumental fight ahead of us, it says. This is directly translated from Reimer Fulmich, who we have continued to support, who is a German lawyer who is constantly calling this stuff out. And he's the one that showed you that they forcefully vaccinated dementia patients in a German nursing home. 8 of them died within weeks later. It is clear that there is some very nefarious stuff happening here. And there is clear that people are not, that are not towing the line, are being attacked, undermined, disparaged, threatened. Even judges. Now, remember what they always try to say about these third world bad guys, right? How this is what happens, how they intimidate judges, how they go after you, how they don't, how they no free speech, how they don't let people report what they want, right? How they arrest people for doing protected things. Weird, right? It's almost like you're describing the United States or the UK or France, because we are. And this is the point, that we are in a very dangerous way. And if we do not do something, and in no way am I talking about violence, but if we do not stand up and do something about this, that we will allow this to continue. And we will look back 30 years from now, or 20 years from now, or 5 years from now, and say, damn it, I wish we would have taken action when we had the opportunity. If you do not want this to go on forever, do something about it. Stand up and do something about it. In no way am I talking about violent action. Violence begets violence. And it's not like violence would even lead to any meaningful end against a country that is so highly armed, or a government, I mean. In no way am I even, to be clear, even if that wasn't the case, you know me, and my mindset is that violence is not the answer. I could be wrong, certainly. But I believe we need a new path forward. And right now, what we need is for every single person watching right now to make your opinion known and to stand up and do not comply and do not consent and stand up for what you believe in, because now is the time. We have all we need. The evidence is here. The science is here. The experts support what you think. So push back. Help me do so. I love you guys. Thank you for being here. And thank you all for joining us on the Super You channel. I'll continue to be sharing that in the near future. We're going to be adding a hell of a lot more. The bottom line is, this is something that will be you. This makes YouTube obsolete. And it is time for that. There is no other platform out there that has everything else that YouTube does except this one. So get on board, guys, because we are pushing back. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. You know, I was going to say one more thing, and then I decided not to, and then I stay vigilant. I love you all.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country have we been told that you can't go to church because it's non-essential, but you can go get an abortion because that's essential.
Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We cut off people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about that. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself.
Stop! Help! Man, this shit ain't right, bro.
But what's happening now as unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look, he ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing.
We the people want to put our government back in its place. We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours is pulled under your nose.
There's a note that says,
I don't have to bring a note, and yours isn't even on.
Just do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen, get out.
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.